It's showtime.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go off and running on this, the 15th day of July, 2021. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room during the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, and all time zones in between in the great globe round. And whatever time it is that you want to listen to the podcast, it's just that if you're not there during the live hour, well, there's nobody in the chat room. But anyway, if you get there right now, you'll be greeted by early arrivers, 68 AMC 343, Anatole, Jeremy in Vermont, and Squeaky, and capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator, Sparky, who, being a third stage guild navigator, well, that doesn't mean one is just heedless and carefree. He's chosen not to fold space into the man cave because the man cave is a space that is hot, and it is very hot in the man cave indeed. Yes, yes indeed. Hi, I'm Robin, and it's Thorn in the Side Thursday, and we got some. We've never really lacked for material for rather, like, going on 5 years now, no slow days. Makes me wonder about August. You know, usually August is like, you know, they go on vacation in D.C. and everything. I don't think so. I get a feeling we're still in extraordinary times, to say the least. And thank you very kindly to Stephen New York. Sounds great. Kicking on all cylinders. The new one-piece dual flageolet Knutton valve arrived, didn't it? Yes, it did. Got it installed, got the Hydroderper fluorostat taken care of, and, well, we're rolling merrily along. Every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different this 15th day of the month. We thank our 15th of the month subscribers via PayPal, and that means thanks go out. Thanks go out to Robert. Thank you, Robert. Thank you, Nagla. And thank you to Cecilia. Thank you all for being subscribers on the 15th of the month. Thanks as well to David for jumping in on fundraising for the evening. Thank you so kindly. And thanks as well to an anonymous friend who has jumped in to, help defray costs for the Horn-In. When that happens, thank you very kindly for that. Remember, the Horn In is an official thing if people decide they want a Horn In, and we're just using the GoFundMe page over at GoFundBob.com. Sorry about the Bob, but seemed kind of redundant to go back and turn it into GoFund Robin. But anyway, that's where we're doing it. It's going to be three, or depending on how you do it, 4 days of merrymaking, unlike anything this radio community has ever known. And that's the first weekend in June 2022. But we got to get started on it soon, like now, because now that we're a national park, you can't book diddly if you wait till the last minute. So we need to book, get all booked and paid for now, so that we can be ready to rock when that weekend arrives. And it's going to be a gorgeous, perfect weekend. That's almost a lead pipe cinch, because it never rains on that particular Saturday in June. And, you know, really hasn't done much precipitating for probably 100 years or more. That date is just special for some reason or another. I don't know, but it's just how the weather gods play it out. So thank you. Thank you, one and all. And where does that leave us? Well, we are at the 350. 350, because I recalculated, and yeah, we're at 350, thanks to Chris's challenge having been met. We're at 350 for today, and that's really quite astonishing considering how things have been running toward the middle of the month. Okay, we're at 350 to go fundraising-wise, and hopefully we'll knock some of that out. Critical race critique. Jeffrey races off this afternoon. On this day in 1971, London's Euston Station staffing color bar undercover audit ends after complaints by a West Indian who was refused a job at Euston Station. It's thought a number of British rail stations still conduct an unofficial color bar. Again, this is an audit, not a saloon full of black people. A new Race Relations Act was implemented in 1968, and a further strengthening of measures to combat racial prejudice in the workplace was implemented in the 1976 Race Relations Act in London. I didn't even know they had one of those. It seems maybe London has come a long way in 50 years, as they have a man of color and a Sunni Muslim as mayor to boot in Sadiq Khan. Speaking of London, that was and still is the home of Murray Head. And yes, Joey and I love the song One Night in Bangkok. The things that make their way into Joey's journal just never cease to amaze me. But then again, I love that song too. That's just a song with meaning that you never grow. Wait for it. It's the song One Night in Bangkok is a song that never grows tired. T-H-A-I. That's more of a visual pun. Tired of hearing a classic. Jeffrey's correct, and if you've ever had a chance to visit Thailand, the best venue to visit is the resort area called Phuket. Just beautiful. Jeffrey wants to tidy up a little bit. Oh, and by the way, the resort city in Phuket is only open to those who have been vaccinated, so you'll not encounter any thorn-in-the-side maggots by the sea. By now, most of you are sick of these idiots in the maggot states complaining about critical race theory being taught in their maggot schools. I'm only a giraffe, but there's no such thing as only a giraffe. I'm only a giraffe, but as far as I know, I think critical race theory is only taught in law school. You see, to understand critical race theory, you mean maggots would have to be capable of, wait for it, capable of comprehending critical, they'd have to first be capable of critical thinking, and there's not much chance of that. Critical race theory provides some of the backstory explaining why it is that African Americans in particular have shorter lifespans than whites, a higher level of infant mortality, a lower level of educational opportunity, a lower incidence of home ownership, and the big one, far lower family wealth than whites. It may also give clues as to why black Americans with COVID-19 have died so far at twice the rate of white Americans. Now, Jeffrey's correct. Because of the redlining and steering, two illegal real estate maneuvers performed systematically by government lending institutions, many African-Americans have not been able to accumulate wealth through real estate transactions. For most Americans, real estate is the most common way to accrue wealth, and black people have been cheated out of the opportunity, including their farms, as even during the Obama administration, featuring Tom Vilsack as agriculture secretary, many black farmers were systematically swindled out of loans, financial relief assistance, and subsidies that would have allowed them to recoup losses and keep their farms. Mm-hmm. No, from slavery to Dred Scott and Jim Crow, Jeffrey wraps up. African Americans have been blackballed for 400 years, and critical race theory clearly delineates this systemic racism in living color. And unfortunately, the racist bigots don't want to deal with that fact because they only want to view the past in black and white or not at all. Yeah. This has been Joey's Journal for Thorn in the Side Thursday, the 15th day of July, with Jeffrey learning from the past so we can have a better future. And there's a $10 one night in Bangkok challenge. And it's not a drag, and it's not a bore, and it's really not a pity when you're looking at your when your head's down over your pieces, you know, when you're not looking at the city. Aye, aye, aye. Fact of the matter is, I've been thinking about doing that at karaoke night. I know. The horror. The horror. But see, you don't have to sing. I'll get a couple of friends to do the singing parts, and I'll just do the... Time flies, doesn't seem a minute since the Tyrolean spas had the chessboards in it. Right. Shh. There will be no recordings. No. By the way, Steve in New York gets us started as well with a $5 challenge. It's a 4+1. 4 is the number of games the Reds are back of the Brewers, and 1 is the place they will be at the season's end. I'd like that. So there's $15 worth of challenges. If those two challenges get met, then we are down to $320. Well, I'll be damned. I did not know that. More useless trivia from Ron and Raleigh. This isn't useless. This is perfect. Murray Head, who did One Night in Bangkok, which was from a musical called Chess, which was written by the two guys from ABBA. Mr. Murray Head is the brother of Anthony Stewart Head of Buffy the Vampire Slayer fame. I'll be damned. I'll put that on a brain cell that will probably retain that knowledge to the detriment of being able to remember where I put my car keys. Right. Funny thing is, this makes perfect sense, too. Steve in New York points out, the things that get this community's interest. An Atlanta band recorded a song called One Night in Buckhead. You know, I hate to admit it, I'd kind of like to hear that. bringing up critical race theory over in the chat room, 68 AMC 343, says the easiest example of what critical race theory studies, compare the federal sentencing guidelines for crack cocaine compared to powder cocaine passed in the 1980s. And then you see the disparity, which nobody with a functioning brain cell challenges that disparity. Right. So that's a perfect example. And so where do we go to begin the program? Well, I suppose that I was talking with, chatting back and forth offline with Darlene earlier. Darlene had seen, as I had seen, the story coming out about the, and apparently the story is just chock full of juicy tidbits. The book coming out next week, and it's been touted all over the for-profit morning media and other day parts as well, very likely. The book by Philip Rucker and Carol Lenig about the final days of the Nitwit Nero administration. And there's some harrowing crap coming out of that. Not the least of which is, and this is where we kind of reach and pat ourselves on the back. About to screw up and use the phrase reach around, and then I would have gotten a whole bunch of email from the dirty minds of the Horn community. No, let's don't do that. Okay, back to Murray Head. As Steve in New York says, now I can't figure what's funnier, the fact that Murray Head had a brother or the fact that there was a family who's apparently really had the name Head. It makes me think of the name Judge Learned Hand and how funny it would have been to have a Judge Learned Head. Now, easy there, Steve, because Learned Hand was an indigenous American, and so that's why he had that name. But, yeah. Well, what about Edith Head? She was a famous costumer and designer in Hollywood. She did the costumes on a number of Alfred Hitchcock films. I wonder if they were related. Then again, I wonder if anybody who worked in Hollywood ever, you know, back when there were, you know, real phones on real desks and real intercoms to real secretaries and executive assistants. You wonder if a Hollywood executive ever picked up the phone, or maybe Alfred Hitchcock, because he was a pervy bastard, picked up the phone and hollered into it, "Get me head." Oh dear. Oh dear. Ron in Raleigh points out, the crack versus powder cocaine disparity brought to you by Joseph Robinette Biden. Well, that's a crime bill thing, but the whole war on drugs was brought to you by Nelson freaking Rockefeller. I suspect that Dave number 11's not fun in here. Dave says, "I knew a guy named Richard Head. He named his boy Junior." Mm-hmm. Take a minute. You'll sort it out. You'll understand why that just happened. Yeah, I was always impressed, too, Steve pointing out. I always thought the name Learned Hand was probably the most perfect name for a judge, especially a revered one. He's the one who gave us, in the course of a set of correspondence between him and Oliver Wendell Holmes, Jr., that old cokehead. Oh, cokehead. Thank you, goddess. Thank you. The old cokehead who spent his time on the court, Supreme Court, during the First World War, suppressing free speech. And in that correspondence, and Learned Hand would have been great on the Supreme Court, but the opportunity never arose. But it was Learned Hand, I believe, who gave us the idea that, and I think it comes from that correspondence, if I remember, oh so many, many years ago, the remedy to bad speech is not to suppress the speech, the remedy to bad speech is more speech. And it really, it held true for a long time, up until about, oh, I don't know, the passage and signing into law of the Telecommunications Act of 1996. And then the more speech turned into more right-wing speech, and that's how it proliferated across the fruited plain on the AM bandwaves and on cable television. I'm sure, says Ron and Raleigh, speaking of the heads, they preferred to be called Rich. Let me see here. Question coming in from David in South Carolina, Stan. Stanton, Virginia. I'm not sure, David. I wish I could say with some certainty. Matt in San Francisco, subject line, the Greens. I knew the Green family. They named their boys Leaf, Hunter, and Kelly. I'll bet that's true. There's a statue down in on the campus of the University of Texas in Austin to, I think, a former attorney general of that state. And the man's name was Hogg. And he really did name his twin daughters Ima and Eura. I think they were twin daughters. I'm a Hogg and you're a Hogg. There was Ada Hearts and Nina Hearts. Things people, and you know, we throw a fit when people want to choose their own names. Yeah, it's been going on for a while, a damn good reason. the story from a few years ago where, and for once, somebody was refusing to bake a cake for someone because, not because of anything relating to sexuality, but there was some, maybe it was a Walmart that refused to do a birthday cake for a little child who said, "Happy birthday, Hitler." Nasty little right-wing couple had named their child Hitler. Mm-hmm. Go figure. All right. No. Because there's a reference to Hitler in the stack this evening. No, the story from that's contained in the book coming out, and I have a feeling it's gonna sell really well, and Carol Leonig and Lenig and Philip Rucker are going to be able to afford separately, jointly and separately, individual homes in the country with a river of beer flowing over their grandmother's respective paisley shawls, because this is some juicy stuff. And the thing is, it's all believable, and we know it's even more believable because of the loud protestations of "No, it ain't. No, it ain't. No, it ain't. It ain't true. Never got said. Nuh-uh. No how. Can't neither. Etc." Coming from Camp Maggot. But like I said, this is where we get to pat ourselves on the back a little bit, a lot. Because I remember the evening on air when the PP tape story broke. I think I was talking to Tracy, as a matter of fact. And it was quite sensational. And the Maggot administration immediately began having conniptions and screaming how, "It's not true, it's not true, I'm not into pee-pee. Everybody knows I'm a germaphobe, everybody knows." Only the allegation was never that he was into water sports, it was that he paid a couple of Russian hookers to go into the presidential suite in the Ritz-Carlton Moscow. And because he's a racist fuck who's the son of a Klansman, that he paid Russian hookers to urinate on the bed where Barack and Michelle Obama slept when they were visiting on a state visit in Moscow. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Jesus. Well, it's looking more and more and more like it's real. Mm-hmm. Oh, wait, back to the heads. "Now it's stale," says Dave number 11, "but notable locals, true. Dr. Dick Head, I kid you not, practiced in Fortuna. Dick Wild, correctional officer. And both fellas insisted upon being called Dick." You know, wouldn't you? The Kiddly Divey 2, wouldn't you? That was part of the program yesterday. Wouldn't you? Yeah, I think I would. And if you were tall, you would insist on having the word big appended to the front of your name. This program, sometimes, this program. Thank you, Dave. More and more of the Steele dossier, a false dossier, a fake dossier, Hillary Clinton started it, even though Republicans started it. Yeah. What was it? The Washington Free Beacon. Mm-hmm. Which once upon a time was anti-Trump. Imagine that. But it was true. They've got, the Russians have compromat on Nitwit Nero, and they started leveraging it early, and it's why they decided to work on his behalf to make him president. It comes from leaked documents that The Guardian got hold of, and Vlad Putin actually gave his imprimatur of support to a Russian spy agency to get behind Nitwit Nero in his presidential campaign during a closed session of the Russian National Security Council on January 22nd, 2016. We even have the date. That's according to the leaked Kremlin documents. And one of the more noteworthy aspects to the Guardian story is that the reference in the document to Nitwit Nero also backs up our usage of the term nitwit, because it refers to him being mentally unstable. Vlad Putin was at the meeting. The heads of his spy agencies were at the meeting. Senior government ministers were all present during the meeting. And they said it would be good for Trump to be president of the United States because it would advance Moscow's strategic objectives, which included social turmoil in the United States of America, and it would make the American president's negotiating position weaker. And by that time, he was already the front runner in the Republican field, because among other things, the for-profit media were making a fucking fortune off of him. He was money. And the heavy hitters of the former Republican Party were helpless against him. He was pure kryptonite. And when Jeb Bush stood up, it seems so long ago now, but when Jeb Bush stood up and said, "Please clap." It was sort of like the handwriting on the wall, you know, "Many, many take a Lufarsin." The Guardian didn't just get the documents and run with them. They gave it to independent experts who, you know, and that would be folks from like MI6 and so forth, maybe the retired CIA types. "No, it looks real to me." "Oh, no, this definitely looks genuine." And they described it as consistent with Kremlin security thinking. Further proved by the way it is with all conspiracies, further proved by the denial of the Russians, a spokes creep for Vlad Putin, Dmitry Peskov. "So the idea that Mother Russia would agree to support Donald Trump was a great pulp fiction. Is very, very humorous, as you would say. Aha, aha, aha." The document number 3204/VD is classified secret. "Trump is most promising candidate from point of view of Mother Russia. He is impulsive, mentally unstable, and unbalanced individual who suffers from inferiority complex." Among other things, they note that they have compromat on him. "There is compromat collected from earlier Trump visits to non-official events in the Russian Federation territory." This, of course, could be a visit to Moscow, or, as has been mentioned in years past, what was alleged to be true, that there were pictures of him having sex with underage girls when he was over for the Miss Universe pageant in St. Peter, in Petrograd. "It is acutely necessary to use all possible force to facilitate his election to the post of U.S. president." Yeah. "If he becomes president, will definitely lead to destabilization of the U.S. socio-political system." and hidden discontent will burst into open. You know, it's always been there. We've known it. The undercurrent of structural racism has been here. But as they surmised and as they predicted, and I have no reason not to think that this is true, well, as we've said before, he exposed every flaw, every exploit in our constitutional system of governance. And then when things like grab them by the pussy came out, well, we knew where we were headed, didn't we? And again, the for-profit media wouldn't refuse to stop covering him. They covered him breathlessly instead, eager for every opportunity to see if he would say something outrageous on their air in order to build more viewership. Donald Trump may not be good for America, but he's great for CBS, said Les Moonves as he reached over and groped another member of his staff. Mm-hmm. So, there it is, and much credit to Darlene. Darlene says, they recognized early on that Trump is mentally and emotionally unstable and saw an opportunity to exploit. They saw our country as socially and culturally unstable. It presented the perfect storm for Putin to manipulate. I still maintain he actually got Trump elected in 2016 with Trump's overt blessing. Well, of course. I mean, why was Sergei Lavrov and other cronies an invited special guest to the Republican National Convention in 2016? It's one of those. Do you remember where you were when? I had gone to Beckley. My dear friend Brian Reznor was running a club then called Munchies, and there was some sort of an event going on, and I forget exactly what it was, but Ferg badly wanted to be there, and I had taken him over, and I was sitting in the car streaming the speeches from the Republican National Convention and thought, what in the hell is going on here? And recognized that this country was sick enough to actually put that man in office, you know, with the creeping horror in the back of my mind of the Electoral College and how it always works to the benefit of conservatives and never to the benefit of anybody even remotely resembling liberal. Darlene continues and said, I also think Trump gave the nuclear codes to Putin like the drug high Don Jr. projected onto Biden. We may find that out, too. Kind of makes me wonder, in light of the story about General Milley saying, it's not going to happen on our fucking watch, talking about a coup by Nitwit Nero, or a launch of nuclear weapons. Not going to fucking happen on our watch. Yeah, you remember the clip. We had it on the program of Don Jr. Alleging that Joe Biden had given the nuclear codes to Putin. We did not see or hear Trump and Putin's private conversations, and it may have been Trump showing Putin trust. Yeah. I don't know what the protocols are, but I hope the fucking codes have been changed. I hope the password to the nuclear goddamned arsenal isn't password. Because Darlene says, can't you see Trump doing that for a monetary return or kickback under the guise of a joke? You know,
why have nukes if he don't use them? So here are the codes, Vlad.
Because he actually said that. What's the point in having nuclear weapons if you can't use them? And can't you see Vlad just asking for the codes to see how far he could push things with Trump? Just how much Trump was his bitch? Again, all under the guise of a big joke, you know. Ha, 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 is locker room talk, just like you talk about all the time when you are grabbing pussy.
Bommel.
And of course, you know, there's that old bit from the late great prophet Bill Hicks, peace be upon him, where he talks about how every new president is taken into a darkened room and he's shown video footage of the assassination of John Kennedy. And according to the late great prophet Bill Hicks, peace be upon him, the new president then says, wait a minute, that's not the Zapruder film. And the CIA director or executive looks at him and says, precisely the point, Mr. President. And the new president then says, where do I sign? Ta-da. Well, something similar very well could have happened in that closed-door meeting. Thank you for the reassurance, Sparky. The codes are changed on a daily basis. Good. But, you know, cell phones and whatnot being what they are now, you can almost see in that closed-door meeting with only nitwit near, or with only Pootie's translator handy, not even an American translator in the room. If you cast your mind in that direction, you can see Pootie leaning over with a cell phone and saying, here, Donald, watch this. It's funny, funny video. It's funny video. I got to get the stupid, not really yet. Yeah. It's hilarious video. You watch. And pushing play and watching that orange old pedophile grunting and rutting away on some Russian child. Ha! 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 It's so funny. What are nuclear codes? You will tell us nuclear secrets, no? Yes. Duh. And, of course, the Russians study us, and they know who we are. In the memo that the Guardian saw, it refers to deepening political gulf between left and right and the U.S. media information space. We'll do anything for a dollar. And anti-establishment mood has been growing under President Barack Obama. I think Darlene is actually quite prescient on this. And it's all just a big joke. And she says, remember Trump's expression after they came out after their private meeting to talk to and take questions from the press? Oh, you could see he knew he'd stepped in something. He'd gone where no other U.S. president had gone before. That was the press conference where he said he believed Vlad Putin over his own U.S. intelligence apparatus. And as David in South Carolina Stan notes, yeah, Khashoggi too. I think Donald Trump helped get Khashoggi murdered. He worked for the Washington Post. Bezos owns the Washington Post. Donald Trump obsessively jealous of Bezos. What a way to send Bezos a message. And, of course, then there was the hacking of Bezos' own phone. And didn't that play a role in bringing to light Jeff Bezos' canoodling, which even though he's filthy rich never liked to part with money. And that wound up with Jeff Bezos parting with a shit ton of money when his spouse decided to say, see ya later. See ya. Wouldn't want to be ya. I want to get as far away from you as I can because it looks like there are people who want to chop you into chutney, too. Why don't you go to space? Circles in circles in circles in circles. I don't want to sound like I'm working Alex Jones' side of the street. I'm not trying to. But it's hard to avoid, isn't it? And after the meeting, Pootie set up a new and secret interdepartmental commission, specifically to implement the special part of document number 3204/VD. VD. Mm. And you know, you can read the story over at the Guardian. And Andrei Soldatov said it. The thing reflects reality. Meanwhile, Liz Harrington, the latest spokescreep for Nitwit Nero, said,
"This is disgusting. It's fake news, just like Russia was fake news. It's just the radical left crazies doing whatever they can to demean everybody on the right. It's fiction, and nobody was tougher on Russia than me, including on the pipeline and sanctions. At the same time, we got along with Russia. Russia respected us. China respected us. Iran respected us. North Korea respected us. And the world was a much safer place than it is now with mentally unstable leadership." Yeah, no.
Most of the world woke up every morning to see if they were all dead yet. Because the guy who couldn't see the value in having nuclear weapons if you couldn't use them was at the helm. But General Milley said, no. When confronted by high-ranking members of civilian leadership who weren't Donald Trump, said, "No, we're not going to let him. We're not going to let him put off a nuke. Not on our fucking watch. There are safeguards in place." Well, shit, there were safeguards in place when he became president, and how did those hold up? Not very damned well. So now, as Steve in New York points out, we know that Putin was pushing to elect Trump. The next question is whether the Trump campaign knew this and collaborated, or the campaign didn't know. However, something stuck in my mind after you just read that article from Darlene. Look at these two dates. June 9th, 2016, the infamous Trump meeting. June 16th, 2016, Trump formally announces. Those dates suggest to me that it was the offer of Russian information to help their campaign, and their announcement just 7 days later tells me that they collaborated, or at least were willing to accept Russian help, because that meeting was all about offering to help by giving dirt on Secretary Clinton. Then, sometime later, Manafort gives the Russians the high-level specific polling data while serving as the campaign manager from June of 2016 to August 2016. As I've said before, Steve reminds us, my dad learned from Watergate that you always look askance at people who deny things that were never asked. And, of course, the infamous non-denial denial. So later on, we can we'll be talking. I have no doubt about that. And we know it's deeply under his skin because of the statement that I just read. And he's been very busy at his little Save America press release machine.
The press is corrupt in this country. They refuse to report on the many cases of election irregularities and outright fraud. They're an embarrassment to our country.
Statements of grievance against Republican politicians who did not bend the knee sufficiently.
Nancy Pelosi is a known nut job. Her enraged quotes that she was afraid that I would use nuclear weapons is just more of the same.
Quotes are, dumbass, not quotes is.
In fact, I was the one that got us out of wars, not into wars, and I was the one who got respect for our country again, not like now when the leaders of the entire world are laughing at us. They didn't laugh when I was there. Uh-oh.
Problem. Because they really did laugh at him when he was there. I mean, it's not like there isn't video evidence. This? At the UN?
Madam President, Mr. Secretary General, world leaders, ambassadors, and distinguished delegates, 1 year ago, I stood before you for the first time in this grand hall. I addressed the threats facing our world, and I presented a vision to achieve a brighter future for all of humanity. Today, I stand before the United Nations General Assembly to share the extraordinary progress we've made. In less than 2 years, my administration has accomplished more than almost any administration in the history of our country. America's so true.
How about that? The entire world is laughing at him. Yeah. Oh, the God. He's in the hands of the goddess of irony. And then he even acknowledges that he's been laughed at.
Didn't expect that reaction, but that's okay. America's economy is booming like never before. Since my election, we have added $10 trillion in wealth. The stock market is at an all-time high in history.
Curiously, that was not a State of the Union speech, and that was not appropriate for, you know, say, using at the UN, but, well, not appropriate is his middle name. As Arnold in PA points out, hey, we were all right. Hopefully this will further deflate the Republican position. It's all dancing with treason. They're not, well, so far there's not a lot of, indication of that being the case. But this book is apparently way under his skin. Mm-hmm.
Nobody had ever heard of some of these people that work for me in D.C. All of a sudden, the fake news starts calling them, some of them, by no means all, feeling bold and brave, and for the first time in their lives, they feel like something special, not the losers that they are, and they talk, talk, talk. Many say I am the greatest star maker of all time, but some of the stars I produced are actually made of garbage.
And nobody has the power to roll him away and have someone, as George Carlin once remarked, check his calendar, man. And he really, really wants a war in Cuba. I don't know about you, but I think I can guess the answer. I don't want a war in Cuba. Frankly, as my buddy Ed Rabel said earlier today, the cranks in South Florida, well, as Ed said, not my circus, not my monkey. Yeah. Yeah, thanks. No thanks. But damn, don't they want us to get our war on down there. But those old anti-Castro cranks, and not so old, in South Florida, who are such reliable Republican votes, well, they know that they will be catered to because they are always catered to. No, Brother Deacon Asa, that was not the Insane Clown Posse wrestling concert. That was a different trip with Ferg. Brother Deacon Asa pointing out, I still maintain regarding the Steele dossier that your position on the PP tape is incorrect. The fact that the degenerate ape denies it so vehemently tells us that he did, in fact, pay those Russian hookers to endow him with golden showers. Golden showers. No, that was slumbers. Yeah, sorry.
The proud people of Cuba are desperate to be free from the iron boot heel of the island's,
capitalizes the word island,
wicked communist regime. These incredible warriors for freedom risk everything to take to the streets in their quest for freedom. I stand in total solidarity with the freedom fighters in Cuba and the brave Cuban Americans who have watched their families suffer in the motherland at the hands of this heartless and brutal regime.
Well, we know he didn't write any of that, except for maybe the capitalization part.
No, you've got to capitalize Ireland. Ireland is always capitalized. Because the island has a capital. It's Havana. I know that. The Biden administration's refusal to forcefully condemn communism and the Cuban communist regime is a national travesty. The Biden administration's ludicrous suggestion that the Cubans are protesting government mismanagement, not brutal communist oppression, is an insult to every Cuban patriot who has suffered, been imprisoned, or died in pursuit of freedom.
See, that's the thing about all of it. What is it that the cranks want? They want a Batista for the modern era. They want a nice, reliable dictator that they can count on to rubber stamp every casino application that comes down the pike. Because that's how capitalism works.
Today's Democrat Party is so far left they can't even take a stand against violent communism. Many are communists themselves.
No, they aren't. Oh, fuck.
As president, I advanced a strategic vision in which the people of Cuba, Venezuela, and Nicaragua would be free, and that the Western Hemisphere would be the first fully free hemisphere in all human history. The Biden administration is squandering a historic opportunity to stand for freedom and human rights in our home region. The Biden administration is betraying the freedom-loving people of Cuba. I fought for Cuba. They didn't.
Oh, was that part of your sexual Vietnam, nitwit Nero? Is that what that was when you were fighting for Cuba? Right. Disgusting. Just disgusting. And I don't think, well, to paraphrase, and this is not to say I don't love the people of Cuba, love the island. I was a devotee of their cigars for a very long time. But to paraphrase Bismarck, the whole of Cuba is not worth the bones of one Navy SEAL. And who knows if some rogue element, some rogue maggot element left holdover might be machinating this miserable horse shit. I mean, that's what's the Canal Diaz? That's what he said. And basically, it's an economic collapse founded upon the impact of a mono economy. Shit, we've seen that here in almost level West by coal Manchinia. We got a coal mono economy. Bottom falls out of the coal industry. Next thing you know, everybody's out of work, and there's a domino effect. That's why mono economies are dangerous. If you don't got no tourists, you don't got no economy. And that's what's happened to Cuba. And what? There are said to be deep complaints about the lack of a coronavirus vaccine. Or the availability of one. I thought I had read somewhere along the way that Cuban physicians had come up with their own vaccine. Maybe it didn't work. I don't know. I just know it's not like, we're bringing them home from Afghanistan to send them to Havana. What a nightmare. What an idiot.
Many are communists themselves.
One shit for brains. Name one.
Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the AOC.
No, sorry. We've had the discussion about what it means to be the radical left in this country. But God, that plays so well to Emery and Marvelline. Oh, they lap it up. Like, I don't know, like cilantro on salsa. Now, I mention that because the great cilantro debate continued into the night. I heard from Lauren out in the hot heat of the not frozen enough north of the Canadian Rockies. I had never encountered cilantro until the 1990s when restaurants started putting it on everything. Those of us who think it tastes like poison aren't even entitled to the respect those fakers who claim to be gluten-sensitive get. Cilantro ruins any dish it is used on. Harumph! I didn't get a harumph out of that guy. Watch your ass. Well, you know, that it's the line about those fakers who claim to be gluten-sensitive. That, oh, Lauren, you're going to get email, honey. Darlene says, like so-called crazy Nancy said when pointing a finger at Trump in a room full of predominantly old white men, all roads point back to Putin. Yeah, they do. He's a, if you're a right-winger in America, he's your puppet master. Yeah, tell me you couldn't imagine Nitwit Nero saying,
and they're all nothing but big duty heads.
Yeah, because he's got the temperament of a three-year-old. Absolutely. Out in Iowa, Frank says, how about a theme song for the day to the melody of Oh Them Golden Slippers, only the lyrics being Oh Them Golden Showers. Nicely done. So, as we see, it's, as promised, a busy thorn in the side Thursday. And it seems like we've got one of these stories every day. I heard from Kevin in Massachusetts earlier today. Kevin pointing out, here we go. Arkansas, Tennessee, and Florida are in the Red COVID Act now. You know, COVIDActNow.org. Yep. Tennessee, Arkansas, and Florida are all red. And Kevin added, I'm masking more now. I just noticed, too, here in Massachusetts, we hit 1.37 on the infection rate, equal to April 2020. We went from green to orange in 2 days' time. 1.47, that is. And it equals April 2nd, 2020. I'm supposed to be in Alabama in early September for a rather important doctor's appointment. Even though I'm fully vaccinated, I'm a little nervous. I'm a lot nervous. And down around Springfield, Missouri, where we have a dear friend. Hi, Kenda. Well, Springfield, Missouri, is on fire. But there's one of these stories every day of people who didn't want to get vaccinated and are dealing with the consequences and still can't learn. The Washington Post had a story noting, Springfield, a city of 170,000 nestled in the Ozarks, has become a cautionary tale for how the more transmissible Delta variant, now estimated to account for half of all new cases nationwide, can ravage poorly vaccinated communities and return them to the darkest days of the pandemic. And the fire department chief, David Pennington, in Springfield said, the Delta variant is a mass casualty event happening in slow motion. And so the Post sent an intrepid reporter, an ink-stained wretch, as it were, to go and interview random people in Springfield and find out why they're not getting their vaccine or taking their appropriate first line of defense precautions. Reporting, several shoppers who declined to give their names described the reports about the Delta variant outbreak as overblown, exaggerated, and a crock of shit. One woman said that her daughter was hospitalized in an intensive care unit right that very minute with COVID-19, but she thinks the numbers are exaggerated. And right there, in that instant, you see how pernicious the dedication and devotion to maggotism is. To the detriment of all and everyone around them, they will remain faithful. This is transcended. Maybe that's what the for-profit media do not understand. This has transcended politics.
like any cult, it has become a religious orthodoxy. You may not challenge any aspect of it, and it does, you know. Well, sure, he got his vaccine because he's brave and he's bold and he's fearless, and it probably wasn't really the vaccine. He was just doing it so they wouldn't assassinate him. But we know better. We're not getting no vaccine. See how it works? Her own daughter in intensive care, but it's like, it's exaggerated. It's astonishing, and it's terrifying because these people will make us go back into the horrors of the shutdown. Another tidbit coming out about Nitwit Nero is that his staffers constantly had to be telling him not to praise Adolf Hitler. Back when John Kelly, who himself was a nasty old racist, was his chief of staff, the new book by Michael Bender, Frankly, We Did Win This Election. And in that book, it mentions a moment commemorating the 100th anniversary. You know, well, the things we lost. Oh, my God, the things we lost in those 4 years. A commemoration of the 100th anniversary of the end of World War I should have been a solemn and, in fact, heartbreaking moment. Instead, because Nitwit Nero was involved, it turned into a clown show. This was the moment when he was afraid to go out and commemorate the end of the First World War because it might rain and he was afraid his hair would get wet. God. In that instant, according to the book, Trump told Kelly,
"Well, Hitler did a lot of good things."
At which point Kelly said, "Mr. President, you might not want to be doing that." And went on to historically explain how the First World War birthed the Second World War and gave the world Hitler. Mm-hmm. Of course, Nitwit Nero denied having made it, but at this point in time, the denial is just further confirmation. But he still doubled down, according to the book. He said,
"Yeah, that Hitler brought back the economy."
Because that's all he can think about is fucking money. To which Kelly responded, "Sir, the German people would have been better off poor than subjected to the Nazi genocide. You can't ever say anything supportive of Adolf Hitler, sir. You just can't." And it never quite got all the way home. Of course, then there's the information contained in his divorce from Ivana, where she said he kept a copy of Hitler's speeches by his bedside. Now, why in a divorce would that come up in what was at the time a confidential deposition transcript? Why? It's not going to outrage him. It's just everything outraged him. He attacked her physically. We know that, according to their own admissions, when he was experiencing pain from a hair transplant and Ivana had sent him to her doctor. Anyway, so today, the for-profit media are getting bolder, and I'm proud of them, I guess. CNN had presidential historian Douglas Brinkley on, explained the nature of, speaking to Jake Tapper, explained the nature of
nitwit Nero's stupidity.
All right, Ryan, thank you so much. Appreciate it. This McCarthy-Trump meeting comes amid the release of a slew of new and explosive books that paint a disturbing picture of Trump's...
Yeah, because he met with Kevin McCarthy today because Kevin McCarthy has no spine and no moral center.
Time in the White House. Joining me now to discuss is presidential historian Douglas Brinkley. Professor Brinkley, thanks so much for joining us. A new book by Washington Post reporters Carol Lenning and Philip Rucker claims that the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Mark Milley, thought that Trump was, quote, the classic authoritarian leader with nothing to lose, unquote, and allegedly told his aides in regards to Trump's continued lies about the election results, quote, this is a Reichstag moment, the gospel of the Führer. Now, for people who aren't that familiar with World War II history, Reichstag moment, that refers to the 1933 attack on Germany's parliament building.
Can I just point out that, you know, that line makes me a little crazy, and it reminds me of how freaking old I am. For people not familiar with World War II history, it's less than 100 years in our past, but there are, you know, there are generations of Americans like, what? Did, like, the cavemen fight that? Hopefully not that bad, but close enough. For people not familiar with World War II history. Ah! But, well...
building Hitler used as a pretext to establish a Nazi dictatorship. Now, a source close to Milley says that the general was not calling Trump a Nazi, but rather was expressing concern that Trump's rhetoric could lead to the environment of that kind of seizing power in the midst of controversy and insecurity.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I Alone Can Fix It's a stunning book people have to read, and it has a lot of Nazi symbolism in it. General Mark Milley talks about the Trump supporters. He fears them as bring brown shirts, referring to Adolf Hitler's followers. Now, of course, nobody's equating Trump to Hitler. But what's powerful here is that the U.S. military leaders, our top generals, admirals, joint chiefs of staff, are worried that Trump has a fascist fixation of staying in power. And they even, Milley calls the Boogaloo Boys and the Proud Boys, these fascist groups, Hitler-like troops. And we all know that.
That is fascinating because, according to this book, he did make specific reference to the Boogaloo Incel Tactical Command's executive staff, Tactical Command Headquarters executive staff. And he did make specific reference to the Proud Boys. So he was getting briefed on the nature of domestic right-wing extremist militia violence in the United States. The question then becomes, how did January 6th happen? Well, the first hearing has been scheduled in the House's commission. And maybe we will begin to find that out. Let me see if I can find that story. Yeah, it's coming up 12 days from now. July the 27th will be the first public session. And there will be firsthand testimony from Capitol Police and the Metro D.C. Police Force. That according to Committee Chairman Benny Thompson's office. And as the article from Agence France-Presse points out, the session kicks off what is expected to be an extensive series of public hearings investigating all aspects of the unrest. Most of the work, however, will occur behind closed doors. I would imagine, though, that some of the more dramatic stuff they will let be seen publicly. And as to the Reichstag fire, Stephen New York points out, and to be an even bigger history nerd, that was not a part of World War II history because it was not related to World War II, but to Hitler taking power because he blamed the communists in order to make his political adversaries illegal, leading eventually to the Enabling Act. But, well, I guess we can quibble, Steve, but it is part of the grander universe of how World War II happened. Das ist die Arbeit von Kommunisten. I think is the quote, or maybe it was Das war. This is the work of communists. The commies done it! And one of the things that conservatives and right-wingers in this country figured out early on was that you could make great hay, and they just tucked it away for another day, wrote it on a cocktail napkin and stuck it in the vest pocket of their three-piece suits, and said, you know, one of these days we may need to call somebody a communist, and it seems to work.
Times Donald Trump seems indifferent at a Charlottesville event, or during a debate just says, I tell the Proud Boys to, you know, stand back and stand ready. So Trump dabbles in this sort of fascist
stand back
Hitler-like
and stand by
imagery from time to time, and he dabbled enough in it that it frightened our Joint Chiefs of Staff and top military brass that Trump is unglued. And in fact, Milley, Jake, says that's what we fought World War II against, were the very type of people that were assembling on January 6th at the Capitol.
Well, and that's the thing. It's not really about the Nazi part of it so much as it is about the authoritarian part of it. The idea that this country actually came closer than we possibly ever have, at least in the last century, to having a leader seriously attempt to overturn a democratic election. It was done rhetorically. It was done in courts. It was done before election boards. And he continues to lie about this. And then we saw what happened on January 6th. How concerned are you, given the fact that Trump has not gone away, and this authoritarian impulse, this desire to...
Quick question. Okay, we'll get Brinkley's answer, because he's a pretty smart guy. But why hasn't Trump gone away? Because he is still catnip to the millionaires of the for-profit media and to a certain extent the rest of us. It's the way traffic slows down at a car wreck. People aren't slowing down at a car wreck because they're trying to make sure that they're safe getting past the area where the wreck has happened. They're getting a quick gander. There's a story in, who was the author that wrote all those L.A. cop novels back in the day? Wrote The Onion Field. Wrote another one called The Choir Boys. And there's a passage in there where some civilians are rubbernecking and gawking, passing a car wreck, and somebody hollers, "Was anybody hurt?" And in the novel, which may, who knows, it may have been somebody on the inside who told the anecdote, but a cop picks up a severed head and says, "This one doesn't look like it's in too good a shape." We can't turn away. But in large part, in some ways, we can't turn away because we keep being fed him. And some of it's valid and some of it's important, like what we're talking about this evening with the memo coming out of Mother Russia. Yeah, Joseph Wambaugh. Thank you. Thank you. Ralph's serving as the ad hoc horn research department. Joseph Wambaugh. Not James Elroy, Steve. Joseph Wambaugh. But, you know, how can we miss you if you won't go away? And so all the time that we were talking about all of this over the course of 4 years, the people higher up were absolutely as disturbed as we were. But they were prevented from being able to say anything out loud. Maybe they were afraid that if they said anything out loud, he would only make it worse. I don't know.
Make it easier to overturn the will of the people is, if anything, gaining steam.
Yeah, I'm deeply concerned, and I Alone Can Fix It. You know, Nancy Pelosi talks about talking to General Milley, saying, "How do we know Trump won't use a nuclear weapon? This guy is unstable. He'll do anything to stay in power." And there weren't any guarantees. And in the military, they were talking about basically a madman being in the White House, and we've got to land this aircraft, safely. The fact that our best and the brightest in the military, somebody like General Milley, who went to Princeton and Columbia graduate degrees, Naval War College, this incredible intellectual, was this deeply concerned about Trump was up to. And what it is a rise of fascism in America. And Donald Trump is the leader of it. And these books that are coming out now are just building a portrait of an authoritarian president, Donald Trump, that was completely hell-bent on not relinquishing power, truth be damned.
Yeah, and it's not just the Nancy Pelosi's of the world. I mean, it's people who served under Trump. It's a former General John Kelly. It's General Mattis. It's John Bolton. Now, on these allegations, Trump responded with a statement today in which he said, in part, "I never threatened or spoke about to anyone a coup of our government. So ridiculous. Sorry to inform you, but an election is my form of coup. And if I was going to do a coup, one of the last people I would want to do it with is General Mark Milley." That is
a non-denial denial. That's where you break out your Woodward and Bernstein and let's go. Where's non-denial? Oh yeah, that's one of those. Matt in San Francisco says, "Let's throw caution to the wind." I'm so tired of people in the media being hesitant to compare Trump to Hitler. It's not only correct, but fitting to call out his acts that mirror the lead-up to Hitler's rise. From prior to and after the beer belly putsch, what are we supposed to wait for? Should we wait until after the camps are built? After the Jews and gays are locked up? Never forget is forged into our consciousness for a reason. Call it out now before we go down the road of authoritarianism. Precisely, man. Precisely. Recognize it for what it is.
Quite a statement. If I was going to do a coup, yeah, one of the last absolutely people I would do it with was General
Milley. I mean, Jesus Christ, that's O.J. Simpson territory. If I had done it. Remember that? If I did it. I'm going to disagree, Steve says. That was not a non-denial denial. That was a fucking admission. That too. Yep. Oh, hey, thanks, Jeremy, for jumping in and answering Joey and Giraffe's One Night in Bangkok challenge. That leaves a $5 challenge from Steve on the table, and that'll get us down to, if that's met two, we're down to $320 for the evening. Thank you. Thank you so much, Jeremy. Thank you, Joey and Giraffe. Thank you, Steve.
Kelly.
What we're dealing with in Donald Trump is somebody who's clever and smart, but is a bit of an imbecile and has no sense of history.
A bit of? Can we stop with the qualifications? He is an imbecile. He's a moron. And so lo and behold, even as we're speaking here, as we move toward the halfway point of the program, we get apparently the disgraced, twice impeached former guy, Florida retiree, has nothing to do but sit around and generate this. He can't even take joy on his tacky ass golf courses anymore. Porterhouse.
Porterhouse, get those shoes gleaming.
We're living in a world that's half 7 days in May and half fucking Caddyshack. Only Judge Smeals was the smart one.
The Arizona Senate hearings on the Maricopa County election audit is devastating news to the radical left Democrats in the Biden administration.
No, it isn't. It's a bunch of fucking fiction.
Maricopa County refuses to work together with the Senate and others who are merely looking for honest integrity and transparency. Why do the commissioners not want to look into this corrupted election? What are they trying to hide?
Oh, and he name-checked some woman named Wendy Rogers in Arizona, so I'm sure she's just all plumb tickled right now. Probably whistling, "We're in the money." Mm-hmm.
but a bit of an imbecile.
And in the famous moment when General Kelly went to Europe with Donald Trump and Trump started praising Hitler about the Autobahn and roads, and Kelly looked at him and said, don't ever say anything nice about Hitler. We all know not to do that. Nobody would do that. But Trump maybe didn't read the memos about World War II, perhaps. I mean, and I think, you know, the late writer J. Norman Mailer used to tell me about, you know, that in history, sometimes only a few names get known. You know, so Andy Warhol would paint Mao Zedong or Elvis Presley. I think Trump wanted to always be in that class of a known name, and he never took the time to notice you don't want to be considered with Mao or Mussolini or Hitler in any way, shape, or form. He saw them more as celebrities because he never...
Off to the gas station, Donnie.
...did the deep reading on what their policies represented and how heinous they were to the world.
Yeah, that anecdote you just mentioned about Trump praising Hitler, saying he did do some things, right? That comes from Mike Bender's new book, and Trump denies...
Bit of an imbecile. No, he's not a bit of one. He's the entirety of an imbecile. Oh, God. Jeremy in Vermont points out, subject line, death yam. Trump is all we've been warned about. When fascism returns, it will be wrapped in the flag or humping the fucking thing, carrying an upside-down Bible. Damn, that's so true, Jeremy. He literally carried a Bible and humped a flag. Maybe we should have started calling him the flag humper a long time ago. Now, says Steve in New York, Trump's press release, imagine if this had come from Obama. Substitute Obama or Clinton for his name. Oh, the planet would have exploded. Dear God, 24/7. Regarding the idea that Trump sticks around because he's catnip, nah, Trump's more akin to the dog shit that you step on when you take a walk in the park and it inevitably follows you home. Yeah, Brother Deacon. And he said, I get it. And the great cilantro debate continues, by the way. Ron in Raleigh says, like asparagus, which causes some people's urine to smell bad, cilantro has the same effect on the olfactory senses in some people. Smells like poison, must be poison. That's one of those primate responses that goes way, way back. Maybe there was something that grew once upon a time in the Rift Valley of Africa that was poison and smelled like poison that just happens to smell like cilantro, and we evolved a gene for hating it. Asa says, I don't understand all the hate being piled on cilantro. What would beautiful, wonderful, delicious Mexican food be without cilantro? Please! Yeah, that's right. Fan the flames, Asa. Fan the flames. So, like I said, we're approaching the halfway point of this Thorn in the Side Thursday. And it is, after all, conversation radio. Let's run over to the stress line and check in and see what's going on. Hey, welcome to the program.
Clever and smart, but a bit of an imbecile.
Yeah, I know, Doreen.
Clever and smart, but a bit of an imbecile. Okay, was that the historian that said that?
Yeah, that was Douglas Brinkley.
Or who said that?
That was Douglas Brinkley.
Clever and smart, but a bit of an imbecile. Are you kidding me?
I know.
Seriously?
I know.
I mean, talk about oxymoronic. I mean,
Hey, Limbaugh's dead.
And that's a historian.
Sorry, you said oxymoron.
I'm going to pick out everything. Oh, jeez. At least we can try to raise our happy meters by thinking of that fact. he's still dead and he's getting pineapples
in reverse.
Yay. You know, when I was in high school, I had World War II drilled into me.
Same
You know, Mr. Oh my God, in Vietnam War, everything. I mean, Mr. Rotolo, he was my high school professor there, and I just adored him. He taught by rote, taught by repetition. And, you know, most students would laugh and say, I don't even have to study for these exams. Of course, I was, you know, anal retentive enough and conscientious enough to still study for his exams. And I did really, really well. And he always, noted that, and I was at the top of his class, and I just, you know, we needed more teachers like Mr. Rotolo, because, you know, he would say, Darlene, you know, Hitler became Chancellor of Germany in 1933. You know, it's just like, to this day, I still remember it. And he kind of, he looked a lot, you know, thinking back on it, he was reminiscent in terms of his appearance of Carl Sagan, you know, and my impression of Carl Sagan is kind of on the short side, the diminutive side in height. So was Mr. Rotolo. And Mr. Rotolo did not have the kind of poofy hair that Carl Sagan had.
Let's not talk about poofy hair, Darlene. I saw the throwback photo. That was some serious that was some serious mullet, Darlene.
I don't know where that came from. I didn't post that. Somebody must have reposted it, or maybe they do that every 10 years automatically on Facebook. I don't know how that got posted, but everybody was commenting on it. It's hilarious.
Oh, it was a great photo. You were a real cutie.
Wasn't I?
Yes.
I was so cute, and I used to think that I was fat and ugly and everything else. And I'm looking back on it, and I'm like, shit, I was kind of cute. You know, I had the baby fat and everything else. And love the Hawaiian shirt because it just felt so comfy, and that was the time, you know. But yeah, that was God Almighty, geez, that was probably, you know, over 40 years ago. But it did get a lot of renewed comments and likes and everything else. But I'm honored that you mentioned or talked about the. You know, my comments this morning that I sent to you when I saw that article from The Guardian, which The Guardian does such tremendous reporting, you know, concerning Trump. And one of the questions that I have, I just want to throw this out there, you know, because I'm not sanguine about Trump ever doing a perp walk and, you know, being in the leg irons and the orange jumpsuit. I want to see that more than anything. But it just seems like he keeps escaping accountability. I feel like with what Kevin was saying, okay, so I'm trying to, you know, pull together disparate ideas and concepts here. But Kevin was from Massachusetts, was talking about how, you know, COVID is beginning to jack up again in his state. Well, we're seeing that in Connecticut, and nobody really gives a shit about Connecticut. Remember, I saw somebody saying something that I was actually offended about. So, oh, Connecticut is the state that people love to hate. And I'm like, I'm really kind of offended at that.
But I've never felt that way. Maybe it's an up east thing.
Neither have I. I mean, I was looking at a list today. We are one of the more expensive states to live in, but so is Massachusetts. I think it's even far worse. New York is really bad. I think that might be second worst. And the worst is, of course, Hawaii, where it's like over $4 to get, a gallon of milk. But I digress. But Connecticut has, you know, thank goodness we had Governor Lamont, a Democrat, at the helm. We were, I think, over 75%. In terms of the vaccine, and I think people being 100%, well, no one's ever 100% inoculated, but I think we're at 75% where people had at least one shot and were on their way to the second shot, at least 75%. And I've been talking to friends and neighbors, my, you know, family members, like I went after my brother one time, because he's like, well, you know, his daughter, my beautiful niece, was afraid she might become sterile. And she's already had the disease. She already caught COVID when she was at university. And so I still was like, oh, you know, it's okay. You know, well, it could be a possibility. She wants to have kids. So the next day I just sent him this text message and I reamed into him and I'm like, are you effing crazy? This is a serious disease. And I said, you know, you can't let, you know, and then she's been helping me because I'm still trying to learn how to drive Wanda the Honda. So she has basically been taking my pup to their various set appointments. And so I had a little talk with her. I said, listen, honey, I said, you really have to do this. I said, it's really serious. And I was explaining everything to her. Well, she got her first shot, along with one of her brothers, and she's scheduled for her second one. So I like to think that my conversations, because sometimes it's one-on-one conversations with people, really help, you know, people that they trust and look up to. And one of the vendors that I use from a guy that pays my driveway, stopped by to look at some things, and he has not received the vaccine. His daughter hasn't, his wife has. And I started talking to him about it. And he was listening. I said, listen, I go, this Delta variant, I said, is really, really serious. And I said, you really ought to get, I said, you'll feel so good. You need to get the shots. I said, you'll feel so good that you did. I said, and it's really important for your daughter as well. And he was listening. He heard me. I could see he was kind of taking what I was saying very seriously. So last week it was reported. So Connecticut has been doing extremely well. We've been well under 1%. I think we've been like at half percentage, you know, 0.5 something. Well, last week we were pushing the 1% ceiling. We were at 0.9 something. Okay. I just checked today. The Governor Lamont releases daily statistics. We're at 1.28 now. Delta variant. Three people have died. We're all, like Massachusetts, we're all going up. Everything is starting to inch and eke back up onto the plus side. Okay. So I don't know if it was Kevin from Massachusetts that, you know, this is a slow, a slow mass, whatever he said.
Mass casualty event.
Or whatever.
Yeah, that was the fire chief in Springfield. Springfield, Missouri.
Right.
Yeah.
In Springfield, Missouri. And I'm sorry, was it Missouri or Massachusetts? I apologize about the state stuff where Kevin was from. But again, these are the good states, the good guys, the blue states, the ones that are playing by the rules. We're following the rules. We're doing everything, or not even the rules, but we're trying to be good citizens. We're trying to do the right thing. We're trying to, you know, and we've all, you know, and this is the Delta variant, and I'm thinking back to what Steve, my good friend Steve from New York said, who's been really looking into, and he's been so diligent in his research. Okay, he mentioned the Lambda variant coming out of Peru.
Yes.
That's on the fucking horizon. We're in big trouble because the Delta variant is now killing our kids in these, in the red states. We've got little children on ventilators. Are you kidding me? So this virus is evolving now, where it's now focusing on the youngest and presumably the healthiest. So I guess this, and again, I blame Trump. I blame the maggots. I blame the Republican Party. I blame conservatism and their bullshit, what we're seeing happening in Tennessee. What we're seeing out in Texas with the whole Democratic contingent fleeing the state, okay, and all the lies and the BS and refusing to wear masks and everything else. So I guess my question is, if Biden, who kind of to me seems like he's starting to get the picture and is starting to grow in anger and starting to feel a little bit more like he looked like a man with a purpose when he strutted through the Capitol building the other day with Schumer by his side. And he was like, we're getting this done. He made a personal appearance to talk to the Democrats in terms of the trillion-dollar budget reconciliation and the infrastructure package. Okay, so he this is coming on the heels of his speech, concerning what's happening in with voter suppression. Is there a way legally, without violating posse comitatus, to bring these red states in line and say, you will start vaccinating people? We will enforce, you're going to be doing the enforced mask wearing mandates. And if you don't, you're under arrest. I mean, I think we're at that point.
Australia's been at that point for what, 6 months? I don't know if Robert's listening, but 9 months? They will arrest your ass. You will be heavily fined.
I think we need to start doing that. I think Democrats need to grow balls and start doing this. And maybe this is the thing that will push that envelope, because we're always complaining about how Democrats are not fighting fire with fire. And I hate saying this. I hate saying anything that might look like posse comitatus, violating, the whole idea of posse comitatus. But I feel like they're trying to kill us. That these states are putting the rest of us at risk. And it's like, we're talking about public health here. We're talking about public health. We're talking about your right to live and your right not to be put in harm's way by a reckless, dumbass motherfucker. It's all interconnected. Trumpism, Republicanism, conservatism, freedom, maggots, it's all intricate. I don't have to wear a mask. It's all interconnected, because what's going to happen when it gets to the point when it's at such a critical mass that Powell today. Was it Powell? Is that his name there? From the Federal Reserve?
Yeah, Jerome.
They have a hearing today. He did say, and like Chuck Schumer said, by no means is Powell any kind of a liberal, but he said that he's in agreement, as far as he can be in agreement, with the tact and the approach of the Biden administration in trying to infuse, in the rescue package and trying to sustain our economy. But he did say, that the deficit, because of course this came from a freaking Republican that was on the committee that had a hearing, we are not on a sustainable path in terms of the deficit and what we're doing. What's going to happen when the virus is raging again, from the Delta, the Lambda, the whatever comes after Lambda, variants? And we're not in a position to continue to support people as the economy struggles to bump, and it's bumping along, and we're not in any position to be full bore with the economy again, because we can't get this virus in check. What then?
And therein lies the horror.
And therein lies exactly what Vladimir Putin wants. I'm all over the map. My apologies.
No, darling. You're perfectly cogent. But it just occurs to me to note that I'll bet you nobody in Mother... I'll bet you there aren't any anti-vaxxers in Mother Russia. You know what I mean? I'll bet you there's nobody in Russia saying, I do not wish to have vaccine.
Exactly, they don't have a choice.
No, they line up and they get their Putinka shot.
They're jacked up. Even Olympians, they've been
that's precisely my point. So when you say it is to his liking, you're absolutely right, because if you've vaccinated your population and we've got a population that's just letting it burn, well, there's a pretty obvious winner and loser there, isn't there?
And therein lies the irony, or the goddess of irony, in terms of these maggots. You could sit there and say, hey, look, you realize what you're doing is playing right into Vladimir Putin's hands? Russia domination of the world. You realize that, right?
Right, but we're talking about the American. But we're talking about the American people here, Darlene, and a third of the American people hear Vladimir Putin and they think about somebody they like, and they hear their God Emperor saying Russia, Russia, Russia. It's just another Russia, Russia, Russia hoax.
Exactly, and that as long as Trump says Russia hoax, or that there's nothing wrong with, being friendly with Russia or whatever, they're going to eat that all up, and they're not going to believe it. And they're going to turn around and, of course, flip the script and say that we're the conspiracy theorists, right? Even though the evidence is there about Russia's interference. And there has to be consequences against Donald Trump, because everything failed. Everything failed. When he was in office, everything failed. The Electoral College failed. I maintain it succeeded, because I think it maintains white supremacy. But I heed your point. I think the point is, it failed in terms of putting some whack job in there. The Department of Justice failed. The Congress failed, at least the Senate piece. The special counsel office investigating Russia, that failed. Ultimately it failed. All of these checks failed.
Every flaw was exploited.
Every flaw was exploited. And, this is something I've always wrestled with, because the concept of manipulation, and I always get back to psychology, you don't have, and manipulation seems like, I don't know what it is, that there's an inherent intelligence in manipulation. And this is where it gets so damn confusing, because the dumbest fucks, the most uneducated fucks, can be brilliant at manipulation.
That's where that Douglas Brinkley comment comes in.
And maybe it's not something, he wasn't very well stated about it, or very, he was clumsy in how he explained it.
Yeah, it was, but you know what would have made it clearer, Darlene? This is more of that 2020 hindsight. But if you say to people, he's a sociopath or a malignant narcissist, malignant narcissist is still too big a term. But if you say he's an imbecile, but he's clever, imbeciles can be clever. Imbeciles can be manipulative. Oddly enough, anecdotally, I guess maybe it was not last night. No, night before last. No, it was last night. For some reason or another, the return of the Pink Panther, the original one, was not the original Pink Panther, but, Peter Sellers, was suggested to me. I went, well, I'll be damned. I remember going to see that at the movie theater. And clicked on it and started watching it, and it was time travel, of course.
But, you know, there's Inspector Clouseau. And my God, the setup to that film, Darlene, you know, the complexity of the stealing of the gem and everything. And then the first you see of Clouseau, he's been busted down to patrolman in Paris, and he's giving hell to an to a blind accordion player with a monkey who's arguing with him that he is not panhandling. He merely owns the accordion. The monkey gets the money. And meanwhile, there's a bank robbery going on behind. And Clouseau is oblivious to the bank robbery to the point that he hands the bag of the bank robber drops the bag of money. He hands the bag of money through the window of the car to the robbers, and they speed away. And that's how and that's exactly what we're talking about here. Being oblivious to the oblivious to the crime going on right before our eyes, because we're all wrapped up in the details of the madness. You see what I'm saying?
I don't know. Well, I don't think we were oblivious. I think many look.
No, but when I say we. I mean,
the whole country.
Yeah, but the for-profit media in particular, it was a daily barrage of what wacky thing has he done now? And I'm pretty sure that every time we talked about any of that on this program. We, and I don't mean me and that mouse in my pocket, I mean me, you, other members of the community, pointed out why this is dangerous. Why this points to his madness. Why this points to his profound and utter lack of mental stability.
Well, I think that he... You know, Inspector Clouseau was like he was like a bumbling, lovable idiot, you know, who just continued to kind of get sort of lucky. We're sort of like, you know, the Horn, most of the 81 million that voted for Biden. We're sort of like Inspector Dreyfus, who is just slowly goes insane.
Right, and is
you know, Inspector Dreyfus,
and he's so confused. He either lights his cigarette or shoots his face off.
And the eye, you know, and in the end, I don't know if it's that same movie, but you know, the eye is blinking, you know, at a high rate because he's so going insane. Because you know, Clouseau is an idiot, but he keeps somehow managing through his bumbling way to solve the crime and get the beautiful woman at the end or whatever. And the thing is that Trump is not the lovable bumbling idiot. That's too kind for him. He's devious. He's evil, all of that stuff. And it's the system that caters to the office of the president, at least if it's a Republican president, that is more or less the bumbling idiot and enabling a Trump. So, you know, I get the analogy, but I almost feel like it's a little bit more.
Oh, it's as all such analogies are. It's overly simplistic.
You know. Yeah, and but I guess my question is: can the federal government crack down? Do Democrats have the guts? Is there a legal way?
Well, I got something that might speak to that for you. Eric Feigl-Ding, Dr. Eric Ding on Twitter. And mm-hmm. David in South Carolina, mm-hmm. Stan sent this along, said, with COVID-19 cases and hospitalizations surging, Los Angeles will now require indoor masks again, regardless of vaccination status. County of L.A.'s mandate is what needs to be done to slow the Delta variant. Where is our CDC? CDC director, please, rules update ASAP. And in the meantime, you just... You have an inherent ability to tap into what's in my stack, and it's like you're reading my mind.
Sorry. Well, good.
Vivek, Surgeon General Vivek, Dr. Vivek Murthy, has put out his first Surgeon General's advisory. And that has to do with the toxic pandemic of false information about the vaccines and the virus. And the advisory says that the false information is putting lives at risk. And in an interview, he said, COVID has really brought into sharp focus the full extent of damage that health misinformation is doing. And he's absolutely right. And it's bad enough that, for instance, Bishop Willard Romney chimed in a week or so ago about, or a couple of days ago, rather, when, you know, we talked about the madness that was CPAC down in Dallas. And he was asked about the fact that the audience there cheered. They cheered, Darlene. You may have already seen this. When it was announced that we would miss our vaccination goal as set by the Biden administration. They cheered. They roared their approval. And, of course, Mitt Romney, being Mitt Romney, said, well, you know, that's grossly unfortunate. And he said there's a huge human cost to have made vaccinations political. Well, okay, Willard, who did that? Our side didn't make vaccinations political. And he asked the same thing that was asked on this program the other night, I think by Stephen New York. After all, President Trump and his supporters take credit for developing the vaccine. Why the heck won't they take advantage of the vaccine that they received plaudits for having developed it?
Yeah. Oh,
I mean,
that is an incredible logic model. Yes.
There is no pox to be wished upon both houses. This pox goes only upon one. The pox goes only upon one house, but yet it manages to infect us all.
Yeah.
And that godforsaken both-siderism, it just makes me want to eat dirt and run rabbits. And, of course, David in South Carolina stand says the GQP, that's their plan, spread COVID, then say, see, Biden couldn't manage the pandemic. And that's exactly what's it. I mean, yeah, no magic eight ball required. The Delta variant's on the rise. Clearly, you can hear the press release being clacked out right now. They can't manage it. We had it on the run. Now they've screwed it up.
Well, and see, this is where, okay, I'm going to go way off the deep end. Okay?
Okay.
Let's go in. This is the Darlene kind of, let's go way off the deep end. Because, you know me, and I'll ask those questions. Because we're at that point where we have to save ourselves here. Okay? Why not do what China did? And those undercover videos that we saw from the Australian broadcasting.
Yeah, you mean weld a few people into their houses?
Not fucking just.
Well, we're headed there. I mean, we are headed there. You mentioned
put the goddamn fucking, like, okay. You know, Green and, you know, Boebert there, and oh, you know, the needle nasty. Okay, bitch. This is them, not us. Every time they want to go door to door, you have two military personnel with arms on display, their armaments on display, escorting nurses, doctors, whoever goes to those doors and say, when are you going to get your vaccine? Oh, you're not going to get it? We're going to give it to you right now, number one. And we'll be back in 2 weeks, number two. Why not go there? Okay, and again, this, it kills me to have to say this. But we're dealing with, you know, we're dealing with almost half the country. Well, I think this country is entirely fucked up. We're, you know, I was listening. There's a woman on TikTok, and her handle is Her Perspective, like Perspective, but Herspective. She's brilliant. She's an Asian woman, went to Harvard Business School, everything. Brilliant. She talks about intersectional feminism. She's just brilliant. And I've been listening to her, and she's talking about the patriarchal system. And she said, make no mistake, we're all fucked up. We came up under patriarchy. We're all fucked up. And it explains a lot. I mean, she's absolutely brilliant with, and she's so fast and quick and boom. I mean, she's researched this stuff. She said, I could have made millions. I went to Harvard Business School, and, you know, I could have been on Wall Street, but I knew that if I, as an Asian woman, if I was part of that system, I would be propping up the patriarchal system, and I made a commitment to fight against it. Okay? So, the tentacles of this, in the psychology and the psychiatry behind what we're seeing today, in terms of doing the right thing and trying to be a good citizen, it's so embedded. I mean, we could probably talk for ages about how it's embedded in patriarchy, how it's embedded in, you know, the kind of weird cultural, you know, the capitalism, all of that stuff. So it's like, when are we going to get to that point, and how dangerous is that? Because people who are of color have every right to be concerned, because, you know, we're thinking about Tuskegee. You know, where they, you know, forced.
I know.
Injections, yeah. And it's in the history. It's in the history. And if you unleash a government, whether it's Democratic or, I mean, I prefer to be a Democratic government, you know, under the control of Democrats as opposed to Republicans. But if we start forcing vaccinations on these idiots, you know, assuming that, you know, they don't have a true medical reason, because there are those that can't, you know, they can't take it.
Yeah.
They can't take a vaccine.
I know someone right now, and she is in the middle of a fight for her life against breast cancer. She is a dear, dear, dear friend of mine, and I'm scared to death for her, because she's sitting in a hospital right now. Because
she's a sitting duck,
And she developed a blood clot in her lung, and I'm worried to death for her. And they, I mean, she flat out can't. I don't know if she would want the vaccine if she was able to take it, but she flat out cannot have it right now because of her chemo.
Right. She's at incredibly high risk, and it's not because she wants to be.
Yeah, Dan Fisher, who so patiently explained to us last week, that yeah, he's vaccinated, but the science is still out on what that means for someone who is deliberately immunocompromised by virtue of immunity suppressant medications to keep his heart from rejecting him. I mean, holy shit. And that's what makes these little assholes so goddamn miserably privileged and rotten to the core. They think they're not going to get it, but they don't give a goddamn about who they kill.
Exactly. And it's forcing us towards autocracy, either way you look at it. Because it's like, if we do start, you know, forcing people to take vaccines, which, you know, they should be doing just because it's logical and the science is there, and, you know, then it's like, do we open up a Pandora's box in terms of government, our government, you know, whatever government or whatever administration is in control at the time, to cross a line? But it's almost like we're being forced to have to cross that line in order to survive.
And don't think for a minute that authoritarian governments like China don't know this. And they're using our problems to point out the fact that their authoritarian way of governing is by far preferable to our notions of freedom, however one defines those notions. Since we're all over the place, as you said already, compare that. There was a huge huge story a couple of days ago, shedding light on the ongoing. Well, it's probably an attempted it's a genocide in motion of the Chinese Uyghurs. Because they don't say it out loud so much, but the goal of the Chinese authoritarian government, which I see as more fascist than communist, frankly, because places where everybody lives in happiness and harmony, in some sort of Marxist utopian wonderland. I think there's one city left in mainland China where it's still like that, but the rest of it is just a capitalist fascist wonderland. And the Chinese want an ethno-state for all intents and purposes. And the Uyghurs are a problem there because they are not Chin or Han or any of the other ethnicities that we think of as being traditionally Chinese. They're goddamn Turkic, okay? The Chinese government, while we have not paid a hell of a lot of attention, have built a massive network of fucking concentration camps. Now, yeah. in a country that wanted to occupy the moral high ground, Trump wanted to fuck with them just for the sake of dick measuring. Sorry, but there's a reason.
Who can piss the furthest?
Yeah, there's a reason to crack down from a human rights standpoint when you consider what they're doing to the Uyghurs. I mean, this is going to sound crazy, but I have to deal with wigs now. And I can buy, if you go buy a human hair wig that is at regular price, damn things can run you $1,500, and I ain't got none of that. On the other hand, for a shit ton less, you can get a human hair wig made in China. And I looked at it, and I'm like, I bet you this is Uyghur hair. Because it's China. Cute little skirts that were sewn by some poor little 9-year-old chained to a table in Guangdong Free Trade Province.
And there's no choice, though, Robin.
No, this is all what was defined years ago as TINA. The argument for globalization was TINA. There is no alternative.
And unfortunately, I'm sorry, the Democratic president said it too. I mean, I remember President Barack Obama. Those jobs aren't coming back.
Yeah.
And today,
Bill Clinton,
Powell,
Bill Clinton signed.
Go ahead.
Yeah, Bill Clinton signed most favored nation permanent trading status for China. Now, granted, if George H.W. Bush had won the election, he would have done it too. That's part of my overarching thesis that Bill Clinton was a great Eisenhower type, moderate Republican president.
No argument from me. And his wife was, I remember that SNL skit. I can't remember the actress that played her when they were having a debate. And she said, I will make the better Republican president. Okay?
Yep, I know.
No argument from me. And today, I can't remember which... I think he's very calm. He's a Republican. It looks like he has like this huge toupee. And he is very calm, but when he talks, he's a fucking alarmist. He really is, they talk about women in hysteria. He's one of those, but but he does it in such a calm way. And how he said, well, you know that China wants to replace us as the lead economy. And you know, whatever his question was irrelevant. But that, to me, because Republicans just ask and say stupid shit. But that, again, was, it's like, yeah, how did that happen? Manufacturing went over there. We sent it over there. We gave it to them. And as much as Trump was sitting there bashing China, little Ivanka was getting all kinds of patents and everything else.
Right,
getting kickbacks from China, you know? So it's like the same thing as Russia, like you said, okay? Anyone over there refusing vaccines? China, they locked them up in their homes and they dragged them screaming, kicking and screaming into, you know, my recollection of that ABC, excellent ABC documentary. Dragged them kicking and screaming into huge warehouses with other people that had a virus. Are they, last I heard, they're doing pretty well, right?
Yeah.
In terms of having conquered the fucking virus. And I'm not saying they did this on purpose. I don't think they did. Okay, whether it was an error, whether it was an accident, whether, you know, in you know, whether it was just wet market stuff, you know, gone bad, whatever. They realized they had unleashed a major monster that could kill their society. Their society. And we've got these, you know, again, conservatism, you know, washing up on our shores, that kind of thing. I feel we're being pushed in the direction where we may have no choice but to basically force people to get these vaccines, whether they like it or not. Otherwise, I don't see how we can move forward. You know, if the Lambda variant, based on what Steve from New York was warning us about and how seriously infectious that is, it even sounds like it's far worse than the Delta. There's no end in sight to this.
It's gonna keep mutating, you know? Until the world gets serious. And you know, we focus so many of our energies, Darlene, on how is the United States responding. We're not producing nearly enough vaccine to stop this on a global level. The lab in India that was producing a vast amount of the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine is completely overwhelmed, and has, you know, at my last reading, has stopped exports to other countries because India is on fire. And
I don't give a shit. I don't give a. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. No, I was going to say, and China, meanwhile, seems to have it under control. But they have it under control at the cost of, behave yourself or we'll blow your brains out. Because this is a country, I don't get misty-eyed about it. Yeah, they can, you know, Trump and Clanny Oakley and Green Cue Ball can call us commies all they want to, but I don't get misty-eyed about Mao. That regime has blithely killed tens of millions of its own citizens. And we looked on. You know, the short-term failures of American foreign policy, we have found out, have had long-term horrifying consequences.
And that is a segue into what I was just about to say. I don't give a shit about Israel. And what they did. Okay. I support Israel. I support the Palestinians. Okay. Israel, I don't care. Whoever started it. And it's and it was the Israelis that started it with their they won't stop with building, stealing the Palestinians' land and territory and everything, keep building and building for some insane religious reasons. They destroyed the one lab. Okay? That was making the vaccines.
Yeah.
Against COVID for
testing.
Palestinians.
I don't think they were even making vaccines. They were making test kits. Because the only vaccines the Palestinians have seen have been a tiny little dribble of Putin's Putinka vaccines. It's a crime against humanity.
Why? Thank you. That was exactly. That is, oh my God, we're reading each other's minds. That is exactly the next thing I was going to say. And that's a crime against humanity. That rose to the level. We can go back and forth on the war and killing and all of it horrific, all of it uncalled for, all of it wrong. That took it to the next level of a crime against humanity. When you consider what this virus is doing, because they know that means more dead Palestinians and they're fine with that. So it's like, I fear where this is going. I fear where this is heading. I fear where our hand is being forced to go with this. But at this point, it's sort of along the lines of, you know, this country kind of moving forward, like you said, and I'm paraphrasing here, you know, we always manage somehow to progress for our own good, even though it's for our own good, you know, like even though there are all these forces trying to prevent that from happening, we somehow manage to just, you know, claw our way forward. It's slow, it's laborious, it's all of that. But it's like, when are we gonna get to that point where Biden is going to say, I'm sending the troops in? Tennessee, Texas.
Yeah, and you referenced Posse Comitatus earlier. And apparently sending in the National
Maybe
Guard
it doesn't violate.
Apparently sending in the National Guard doesn't violate Posse Comitatus.
Well, then, you know, and again, we have the whole other nuance, the whole other concern of, you know, who is in the National Guard.
Right. It's a separate topic, sort of. But I got a story in the stacks I haven't gotten to yet. There were two members of the Seattle Police Department who invaded the Capitol on January 6th. Seattle. They went all the way from Seattle, Washington, to Washington, D.C. to attack the government of the United States. And if anybody should know better, a cop should know better. But there is the ongoing Oathkeeper and Free Percenters who have specifically targeted for years. See, this isn't just a recent failing, Darlene. This is a failing over the course of a damn near generation, where we have allowed this shit to fester inside the military, inside law enforcement,
yeah,
and in hospitals,
yeah,
in our medical establishment.
Yeah.
I mean, this isn't Joe McCarthy saying, I have in this folder a list of, no, they goddamn existed and we did nothing about it under the guise of I'm sure if this program had a humongous audience and I said this, then, you know, Lib Talker says he hates freedom. No, but the public good comes before the personal good. There's not an enlightened state in the world that doesn't acknowledge that fact. But we've reached a point where we put individualistic so-called good, so-called freedom,
ahead of society's ability to survive. You know, how free did those poor maggot assholes feel when they couldn't find toilet paper? I know that's a vacuous kind of analogy, but it's real.
No, it's not. But that will fly completely under their radar. They won't pick up on that.
It's like what Randy was talking about last night about inflation. Silly shit. The inability to get chicken wings right now. I mean, this is America, for fuck's sake, Darlene. There's never been an inability to get anything that we could produce. You know, I'm old enough that I remember the OPEC oil embargo, but, you know, that was OPEC. Huh? But we didn't run out of fucking chicken wings then. Just
we're
one time. Yeah, just, you know, because we do food porn here. There's a brand of hog jowl that I just love. I haven't seen it since the pandemic. It's probably to my benefit that I'm not drinking diet soda, but I haven't seen a can of caffeine-free Coke Zero since the pandemic. I haven't seen caffeine-free Diet Dr. Pepper. I haven't seen Orange Crush because there was an aluminum shortage. And the aluminum shortage hit the brewing industry, and you couldn't get canned beer. And maybe we didn't notice because we weren't all out partying with each other. But it's still here. And
it's, oh yeah, I mean I don't yeah, like I have to order groceries tomorrow. I can't even drive anywhere yet. But I can't, it would take me probably most of the day to do grocery shopping, where it would take people like an hour because of my physical limitations. Okay, so that's why I have to pay a lot more to hire somebody, you know, through Instacart, you know, whatever, to grocery shop for me. Okay, I'm down to my one last K cup of caffeinated coffee. I'm like, what the hell is my problem? I'm really pushing it because that doesn't mean there's going to be any of that necessarily available the way that I used to easily get it and want it. This stuff is, and again, I probably sound like a real spoiled bitch, but if I don't have that cup of coffee, I basically feel like I have Lyme disease. I need the caffeine in the morning. It's just one or two cups a day at the most. That stuff is not guaranteed anymore. It's far from guaranteed. So we're in a mess. I think we're still in a mess. We had hoped that when Biden was elected, we had, you know, I mean, we definitely, you know, could take kind of a collective heave and sigh of relief, like a phew. But the other side just keeps ramping it up even more.
Because it's all politics to them. This is a zero-sum game in which there are only W's and L's. There aren't even any ties. And it is a game for all the marbles, and it is existential to them, whereas, you know, we're still hoping to pat heads and convince people with reason and common sense, and that doesn't work on the American people. Darlene, I just got a note from Clarence in South Carolina, Stan. Motivation to vaccination. Here's an idea for motivation. Hit them in the pocket. Garnishment of paychecks and Social Security payments will get people to make a decision. Money will be returned after you show proof you and everyone eligible in your family is vaccinated. I don't know if we could do that legally, but it's kind of like the quarter you have to put in the buggy at Aldi to get the buggy out, and the quarter comes back when you put the buggy away.
Right, and it's maybe the first step towards, you know. But again, messaging, you know, it's like, hey, Boebert, Green, all of them, if they're going to say, you know, okay, do you really want to be one of those individuals going door to door in any of those red states, talk to people about vaccinating without having security around you?
Oh, fuck no.
Or military personnel, or it's like, the Democrats can fucking turn it on them and say, well, based on what Lauren Boebert and, you know, Marjorie Traitor Gangrene just said, we have to ensure that the people who are trying to do good going door to door must have military protection. They caused this. Go all fucking Jim Jordan on them. They did this. Now, military, they're going to be at your door.
Hey, here's an idea. Wait a minute. Do it through... Wait, hold on. So I just had a little light bulb go on. Do it through the Census.
Okay.
Do it through the Census Bureau.
Okay.
And, you know, we're just taking a survey here. We're from the Census Bureau. We're counting vaccinations in the county. But nothing is going to succeed at mollifying the professionally perpetually outraged right. It just ain't going to happen. And
but see, this is the whole idea of, and they don't get it. Freedom isn't cheap. It costs a lot to be free.
Yeah.
And it may even seem, freedom is not free. Never was, never will be. It's expensive to be free. It really is. Sad but true. And it's sort of like, freedom can cost you freedom in a base sense of the word freedom in order to truly be free. You know, in other words, you got to wear a mask. It sucks. You got to wear a mask. I don't like it. I would double mask today. I had my driver's training today. And my trainer wore a mask. I double masked because, you know, she had to go to Minnesota recently. She's inoculated. I'm inoculated again. It's not 100%. And I remember this sweet nurse, when I was getting my second shot, I had some questions for her while I was waiting my 15 minutes. She was very, very clear with me. And I appreciated this young nurse. I said, can you tell me, you know, when will I be immune, you know, totally immune? She goes, well, and she was so sweet. She's like, and she said it twice. You will be 95% immune with the Pfizer. You will not be 100%. You will be 95%.
Yeah, relative to
That's
the original
a goddamn
strain.
Good nurse.
Yeah, relative to the original strain.
A good nurse. Right. She didn't say that, but she was very clear. You still need to be careful. You're not 100%. And she didn't even bring up, you know, the relative strain. This was before the Delta variant has now come to the forefront of our awareness. Okay, I think it was before it was even coined at that point. It was back in May, maybe the Delta strain. I think it was before the Delta strain, right? It was in May. It was May 27th. So I said, yeah, I will be immune by June. Is what I, you know, that was the mnemonic or what I kept telling, immune by June. But I'm not 100% immune. So I double masked in my, you know, because we were closed up and it's hot today, humid. I have the AC on, but the windows were mostly closed. She's a nice lady. I'm sure we're both okay. But we took, you know, I took those extra precautions and she did as well. Because you just don't know. And the party that sits there and says that they care about family values and lies and all this shit. We got little kids on fucking ventilators. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? And then Tennessee does what they do.
Oh, and I got a Tennessee update.
Concerning anything? Go ahead. Lay it on me.
About a week before she was out and out shit canned, Dr. Michelle Fiscus, who was the top vaccine official in Tennessee.
I saw a headline, yeah.
Yeah. Somebody mailed her a dog muzzle.
And at I least saw that headline. Yeah,
at least she's got a sense of humor about it. She said, well, whoever sent that doesn't know me very well. That's for a beagle, but I'm a pit bull.
Good for her. You're fading out. I hope.
That's me okay. In the new mic boom. It's a challenge. I need to ride it a little more.
I hope you can hear me. Okay.
Yeah, you're fine. Yeah. But imagine whoever it was that went to Amazon to find that thing. I'm gonna send this to that. Go out there. This is funny. I don't care who you are. I'm sorry, they're psychopaths. What kind of sick bastards want to see teenage children fucking die? The numbers appear to be small on the front end, but Darlene, one child on a ventilator is too many children on a ventilator. And what was the number the other night? 10 of them? 10 of them in Mississippi? And the Confederacy's turning red again.
That is wrong. That is so wrong, and it's so devastating. And it's look, we're now at 1.28% here in Connecticut. Everything is starting to go back up again. And we did everything right. And Republicans are screaming and crying here in Connecticut about how, you know, Lamont is governing by fiat, by, you know, executive order. And it is time to let, you know, it's time for you know, your representatives to get back to work. They're full of shit. Okay. Lamont, yeah, he issued over 300 executive orders. He's only asking for 11 to stay in play right now, related to the pandemic. Okay? But I'll tell you this, I'm fine with it. He's done a fantastic job, and I'd rather have a Democrat in complete control of the government than a fucking Republican any fucking day. Because we're nicer people.
We actually give a damn about people.
We actually give a damn.
Because so much of Republicanism is wrapped up, Darlene, in libertarianism, and libertarianism is the ultimate fuck you politics. It's all igamfu. I got mine. Fuck you.
Well, and I do blame. I do think it on a cultural in terms of a cultural shift. I do blame the movie Greed is Good. Is that what the name of the movie with Michael Douglas?
Oh, that was Wall Street.
Greed is Good. Oh, Wall Street. Oh, he said Greed is Good. Greed is Good. Greed is Good. Remember?
Yeah.
Wall Street. So that mantra. And Michael Douglas, even to this day, says, I'm fine with it. That's okay. I didn't have a problem with it. And I feel like it unleashed something in the American psyche. I really do. I don't know if you agree. Maybe you don't. But I felt like there was a turning point, was sort of like Trumpian, in the sense that Trump allowed, you know, he enabled what was, and coming, hearkening back to the Guardian's reporting this morning, and that memo that was leaked. Okay. You know, it all more or less allowed, because the Russians said this, Putin and his, whatever the hell it was, his group there, that private meeting, that Trump would uncork something that had been, I think they used the word, what was the term, seething under the surface?
Yes.
Seething there? And I feel like that is what happened in terms of Wall Street and Greed is Good, the Ayn Rand kind of bullshit. Mm-hmm. It uncorked something that was seething. It legitimized.
Well, and that all happens during the Reagan 80s, and it was part of a massive cultural shift.
Yeah.
And it's and because we do not live long lives, all we can do is look historically back at the excesses of the 1920s. It's the same thing. Laissez-faire Republican economic policy gets loose. Everybody thinks they're having a good time, and then everybody winds up, you know, putting the economy in a ditch.
Kind of a Great Gatsby kind of a encapsulate, like a Great Gatsby kind of a encapsulation from Faulkner. You know, the excesses and all of
And you know, Randy Radar points out, wait till Emery and Marvelline get the medical bill for their kids' illness. I mean, there are teachable moments here, but that's, you know, after the fact. And I need to send some thank yous out. Thank you very kindly to Ralphs for meeting Steve's challenge, and thank you very kindly to an anonymous friend. Let me check in here. I'm looking. No. Still looking. An anonymous friend who jumped in, and so we took things down to 275. We're at 275, so that makes tomorrow.
That's awesome.
Yeah, a lot less terrifying, indeed.
A lot better. Well, I'll put forward a $100 challenge. How about that?
Okay.
My Darlene's belated birthday $100 challenge.
Okay, the Darlene's belated birthday $100 challenge is on the table. Thank you, Darlene. And that'll get us.
You're welcome.
That'll get us down to just almost a regular day tomorrow, which will be humongous. That's really wonderful. Thank you. I got a note from.
Can I thank? Yeah, please. Can I thank someone?
Absolutely.
I want to thank Dan Fisher, who I know he said tongue in cheek, "Oh, Darlene's like a good neighbor. She's quiet, but she's always there listening in the background." I now have a blood red heart on my new license.
Atta girl. Good on you.
Which means I am now an organ donor. If I should meet a untimely fate, but I thought specifically of him and his advocacy of everything that he talked about, because I was very squeamish about it and nervous about it. And I said, well, who would want my organs? You know, a disabled, you know, FSHD muscular dystrophy person, but you know, I my last doctor's checkup came in pretty good.
You're not sitting there working over your second pack of Camel Filterless this evening. So
no, not at all. Pretty fortunate with that. So if they can, if something in me still has some viability, should I shuffle off this mortal coil, as you say, and it could help someone live a decent life and a little bit longer, then go for it. So I am now designated an organ donor, which I think the state of Connecticut could do a little bit better on that in encouraging people to become an organ donor, but by maybe giving a 10% discount on renewing your license or a future registration or something like that. That could be a nice thing to do. That's just me, you know, thinking that. But there you go. So thank you to Dan Fisher.
I'll drop Dan a note. Well, I mean, you're friends. You can drop him a note and tell him. He'll be
sure. He will be. We don't communicate much on Facebook, but we are friends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just shoot him a note. He'll be tickled pink.
But it sounds like you're basically saying that you're not necessarily averse to Biden going all, you know.
Well, there's only so much the man can do, and I'm not making excuses. he's the president, but the ruler of this country is Joe Manchin. And we need to get that all the way down to our toenails, Darlene.
Well, I would like to think that what I saw in Biden's face, in his eye, in his look, when he strutted through the Capitol, our nation's capital, the other, I think it was yesterday, with Chuck Schumer, I'd like to think that it's game time for him. Because he looked at the camera and said, we're getting this done. And this came on the heels of his speech about the voter suppression. And he called out Al Sharpton, my friend Al Sharpton, boom, 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 boom. And there's going to come a point in time, and he mingled, like, I don't know if you watched the speech and the aftermath of the speech. And how long he mingled with the crowd that was there. C-SPAN kept the camera on that whole, you know, we couldn't hear anything, what people were saying. But there's going to come a point in time with the Al Sharptons that are going to say, listen, Joe, you got to up the ante here. Because, you know, and because if we don't do something, 2022 is going to be a potentially a devastating nightmare that comes into reality for all of us. So I'm hoping that the resolve that I saw in his eyes about the reconciliation and the infrastructure package, you know, I'm hoping that that's going to get transferred, that he's growing, you know, he's getting more and more. He has the capacity to learn from mistakes, and I'm hoping that he'll get to a point where he's like, everyone needs to get vaccinated, whether you like it or not. And the only way you don't get vaccinated is if you have a very, you know, a good medical reason. And that we are going to protect our people. How many shots across the bow do we need? January 6th, the Biden campaign bus getting pushed off the goddamn road. With Heather Heyers?
Yeah, Heather Heyers.
The list keeps growing, okay? You want to go door to door. It was very easy for me to ream out my dear brother. It was very easy for me to have a calm, you know, cogent conversation with my niece. It was a little bit more risky for me to talk to the guy that you know, I've paid a lot of money to pave my driveway and say, and try to talk him into getting that vaccine. And he was hearing me. He was listening. But can you imagine? You're taking your life into your hands, knocking on those doors in those states that, you know, are defiant. Those individuals, those heroes, need protection. Somebody's going to get hurt, okay? I'm worried about that. I'm worried we're going to lose a valued member of our House of Representatives or Senate because of the likes of, you know, Marjorie Traitor Gangrene, Lauren
Bobblehead Boobert. Oh wait, we have a Lauren Bobblehead Boober sighting. You're gonna, I confess, it's kind of like reading a gossip sheet, and I'm still agnostic about the awesomeness of Dick and a Wig Cheney. But I did love the passage that was related about how she treated Jim Shorts Jordan. Get your fucking hand get your fucking hand off me. You started this, you son of a bitch.
You started it. Okay, and boy, does that say it all.
Yeah, and I loved it because John in Central PA sent the story along to me, and I laughed out loud. He said, I can picture you saying this in your Count Dicula voice. That fucking guy, Jim Jordan, that son of a bitch. I smacked his hand away and told him, get away from me, you fucking did this. You know, because she's just, she even sounds like Dick, just an octave up.
Right, and again, you know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. We, you know, we really have to take, you know, I love that Dick in a week. wait a minute, you know, we have
yeah, because it
really
has the bonus of being a little dirty, too, but, you know, yeah.
Well, you know, well, Miley, General, fuck him. Fuck Miley, too. Okay, the fact that he is friends with her, good friends with her, makes him suspect. The fact that that son of a bitch was standing right there with Trump in the Bible display in front of St. John's Episcopal Protestant Church, you know, the Church of Presidents there, and then mea culpa after the fact. Okay.
Yeah, and went there in BDUs. That's significant. It's not just that he showed up. He showed up in BDUs, you know, battle dress uniform.
Oh, yes, he did. He was in the camo and everything else, and then, oh, mea culpa. So, look, either he's playing both sides or he is as stupid as shit. I'm going to go with the latter, which does not, to me, lend any kind of sense of confidence, okay? And we know that, you know, Dick and away Liz Cheney is out for her own aggrandizement, for her own advancement in the political firmament, if you will. I do think she is, to a certain degree, an institutionalist, as long as it is, you know, hardcore Dick in the wig, you know, her daddy kind of Republicanism. Okay. So I totally think that it's one of those nuanced, walking that fine line kind of thing. I totally believe that she said that to him. Get your fucking hands off me. You know, because all of a sudden, you know, Jim Jordan, Mr. Chivalrous dickwad that he is.
The ladies. I mean, God damn if he had a butternut uniform. We've got to get the ladies out of the aisle, you know, even though he's got the wrong accent for all of that. But, oh, please.
Well, and all the more reason. All the more reason for him to be investigated for that 9/11 style commission, January 6th commission that Nancy is pushing forward, and for Nancy to say no to Jim Jordan being on that commission, because based on this recent revelation that we're hearing about what Liz Cheney stated, who is on the commission, Jim Jordan should be one of the ones that needs to be investigated. She said it. You caused this. You started it. You.
So, oh, and by the way, Stephen, New York just noted CNN confirmed that confrontation today. So it's no longer just an allegation out there in a book. Other people heard it too.
It's been heard. Okay. So guess what? If Liz Cheney and her comment that has just been confirmed by a Steve from New York saying, you know, what he saw on CNN confirmed it. If Democrats are going to sit there and say, whoa, this has a lot of credence to it. And so should what AOC has said, what AOC said, what she experienced.
Right.
Okay? Because that's part of the problem with Democrats. They always place, it's a subtle undercurrent, they always place more weight more weight on what frickin' Republicans say than what Democrats say. That's got to stop. Legitimizing Republicanism. You know, I don't know who was it that talked about that in one of your recent past programs about it was brilliant about what, you know, why are Democrats trying to bolster up the Republican Party?
We've touched on that a number of occasions, and you know, I mean, that's up to. And, you know,
we need a strong Republican Party.
Yeah, we need a viable Republican Party.
Strong.
Why?
Fuck that. No, enough of that. And Liz Cheney's a viper, and I hate to insult vipers. I hate to insult snakes of any sort because I like snakes. I think snakes are cool. But Liz Cheney's a viper. She'll turn on you quicker than, you know. You got to watch your back with her.
Oh, she's a diehard opponent of the AIC Act. Goes without saying because, Wyoming produces coal. The AIC Act has nothing to do with Wyoming. It doesn't mention Wyoming. It doesn't even touch on the regs regarding surface mining in Wyoming. But she hates it because... Well, she's the good kind of politician. She gets bought and stays bought. And she is owned by the coal industry, among others. I mean, it's a great, you know, when you think about it, darling, it's a great gig being a Republican member of Congress because all the things that you support are the things, are things that corporations are more than happy to pay you to support.
Oh, absolutely, and it takes no brain cell power to do what they do, because if you listen to any of the hearings, any of them, unless it's a situation, rare circumstance, okay, where Democrats and Republicans are kind of on the same page with stuff, and that's rare, but if you listen to the dumb-ass questions that they, even today at the Powell hearing, okay. They're all on message. They're all on the. It is so easy
and that,
for them.
As I've noted on a number of occasions, that extends
to their research.
Yeah, well, that they don't have to do any research. It's all spoon fed. That extends past the politicians. That's the media outlets. I mean, I get up in the morning and I can tell what's going to go down all day long in right wing media. Because they have their marching orders.
They're talking points. And look, it's not like Democrats don't also get talking points. We have them too, okay? But we think things through and we ask questions that really go beyond the main point. Okay, so guess what the talking point was today during the Powell hearing, you know, Federal Reserve with the Republicans? What was the dominant theme? Inflation.
Right, because today wasn't deficit today. Today was inflation day.
Oh, they definitely brought up deficit, but inflation day, it was inflation day. That was the predominant thing. And, you know, and they're so fucking stupid. And that was the thing about, you know, they reveal themselves, okay? So, like, you mentioned Trump being clever. You know, that was one of the things, because we've talked about so many different things. The whole thing about the historian there talking about, you know, he's smart and clever, but an imbecile. Okay, cleverness more or less, and this is where it really is a mind fuck, and this is why narcissists are so good at what they do. But it's like cleverness kind of denotes subterfuge and almost like kind of a three-dimensional chessiness sort of a thinking process. Trump was never like that. He was totally on the surface. There was no cleverness. I would refute that. I would say there was no cleverness with Trump. Trump, you know, and then again, arguably it could be viewed as clever. This is where you go into a major mind fuck with a narcissist like Donald Trump, because Donald Trump was always on the surface about what he was trying to do. He just said it outright. He would just come right out and say it. You know, yeah, we're trying to do this. Or, yeah, you know, if we don't do this, then no Republican will ever be elected again. And if we, you know, that kind of thing. So we're, and the media would just say, well, he's on the surface with it. He's being upfront about it. So it's almost like it legitimizes it. And could that in and of itself be viewed as clever? I don't know. This is where you get into these kind of loops, you know, in your thinking. It's like, it's the mind fuck. We went through 4 years of a mind fuck, and he's still trying to mind fuck us.
Yeah, he's an abuser. He's behaving in classic domestic abuse, in a classic domestic abuse pattern.
Mm-hmm. He's an abuser. He's a narcissist.
To throw something else into the mix.
Oh boy, more.
Steve just sent a note. Multiple members of the Yankees baseball team have tested positive. Three members of their pitching staff have tested positive. And it's caused, and you know, there's nothing bigger than a Yankees Red Sox game. Well, that's off.
Wow. So what was the team that was tested positive too? There were eight members. There was another team last month. Remember?
Yep.
That was the precursor. They were all inoculated, and there were eight members. And I think I might have even texted Steve about that.
In fact, I've got Steve on
the
line. Let's bring him into the conversation.
Hey, Steve.
Hey, Steve.
Sure.
Howdy, Darlene. I've been thinking about the conversation about Trump being clever or whatever. I don't think he's clever. I think what he is tenacious.
And manipulative.
He's like, he reminds me of a rat. You know, a rat or even a pit bull. When they get their jaw around you, they don't let go. And I think, hold on, maybe that's me again. I think he's more that than he is anything else. And the other thing too is, it's like a child. You know, when a child wants something, can I have it?
I've lived that.
Yeah. And he's also like, Joseph Goebbels. You know, he knows, it's not like he's intelligent. It's not like he has a historical background to know these things. He doesn't know these things. These things.
There is an intelligence behind manipulation.
The smartness.
It is incredible intelligence, and I'm wondering if...
I don't think he's manipulative.
But there's an intelligence. I think he is. Oh, he's highly manipulative, but there's an intelligence behind it that maybe psychiatric science, the DSM, is a certain type of intelligence that hasn't really been pinpointed yet. I'm telling you, it could be culturally and socially birthed, in terms of how he was brought up, and it's so ingrained that it's natural for him.
I think he's smart. I don't think he's intelligent.
No, he's not intelligent. He's not intelligent in the classic sense of the term. He's not educated, for sure. But there is an intelligence behind manipulation. Any woman that's been in a relationship with a narcissist, I, you know, ding, ding, ding. We know that.
Well, I don't see. I don't think that's what it is, though. I don't think it's. I don't think he manipulates. I don't think he's. I don't think he's intelligent enough for that. I think what he does is he latches on, and doesn't let go, and people eventually go, "Oh, okay, fine." That
I don't know. I don't know if he could have gotten that far in life, Steve. I think I tend to disagree.
I disagree.
And he knows how to say something over and over and over again. There's nothing manipulative. Yeah. He also knows that if you say something over and over and over again, people believe it.
Yeah, but it depends on what he's saying over and over and over again. That statement in and of itself is saying over and over and over again could be manipulative.
Yeah, it can be. It can be goal oriented.
Yeah,
To the extent that put it this way: to the extent that he plays on people's bigotries, biases, and fears and hatreds, that's manipulation. That's mm-hmm. textbook. I mean, it's not like he just stumbled onto them.
And there's a certain intelligence. Again, not classic intelligence, but there's a certain intelligence in the fact that he honed in on this and used it to his advantage. And again, I agree with you, Steve. I don't think it's intelligence in the classic sense of the phrase or what we of the word, or you know, in terms of what we think is intelligence. But there's some because again, as I said to Robin, I haven't really been able to pinpoint because I know that the last guy I dated was not educated. He was not incredibly intelligent, and I was almost willing to settle for that, but he was incredibly intelligent when it came to manipulation. And a lot of women, intelligent women, can succumb to that. And I consider myself a pretty intelligent woman. So it's a different kind of thing. It's kind of smart.
Well, and Chris in Portland just pointed out, is self-preservation and fear of going to prison worth an extra 20 IQ points, maybe? I think there's some truth in that. And over on Twitter, we now have a split in the circuits. Twitter, our pal O Pipe Down says, I have to agree with Steve on this one. Dude is incurious, goal-oriented, yes. Manipulative, yes. Can't say there are a lot of smarts, just tenacity. Well, you know, there's that old saying out there. Calvin Coolidge is the one who said it. Nothing can take the place of persistence.
Persistence.
He is persistent. And he is persistent.
And I think, he is. Persistent. That I would agree.
He is persistent in his avarice. But at this point, in time,
right.
It feels a little bit like a parlor game, because the bottom line is the guy would burn down the world if he thought he could make a nickel out of it or it would save his hide.
Exactly. That was the other thing I was going to say. I think persistence, I think it's really about survival. And that's why he's desperate to become president again, even to the point of saying, you know, I'm going to be reinstated in August or whatever, like, you know, the second coming of Christ or whatever, because he realized and learned that he could get away with a lot of shit as president. So imagine if he could become president again, then all this stuff with, you know, the Trump organization and whatever is nipping at his heels that we don't know about, all of it would go away. He's desperate.
Again, I don't think that's what it is. I think what it is he hears in his daddy's voice. He hears his daddy's Fable. Voice in his head, yes. And says, "Only a loser loses," and that's all he hears.
Or he hears his
right. I don't think that's necessarily inconsistent.
I don't think so either.
With what I'm saying.
But I don't think so either, Darlene. And
yeah,
I think it's worth mentioning. That there is a reference in all of this reporting that he referred. He said he referred to Angela Merkel as that kraut. And when he was told that that was, he said, yeah, well, I know all about
the Krauts. I learned from the ultimate Kraut, my dad.
So that, you know, his father abused him. And his father was also his pole star because his mother was largely absent in his life, Marianne. And Marianne's the one who ultimately said, my God, what kind of monster did I give birth to?
What about it?
Yeah. Unfortunately,
and
we've
Marianne
got
Marianne may have very well been
abused. Can I say one last thing?
Yeah.
Fred.
Yeah.
If you were to study, if you were to study how Alois Schicklgruber treated his son, you would see an absolute
parallel.
Parallel. And you know who I mean by Alois Schicklgruber?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, when you're saying this, Robin, I'm thinking to myself, oh shit, everything I've ever read about his family was exactly what you just described.
I think the last novel that Norman Mailer wrote was called something like The Dark Forest, maybe. I read it eons ago, back in the 90s. But it is a fictional retelling of the life of Alois Hitler.
Mm-hmm.
Mailer was an asshole. But, you know, welcome to Authors 101. You kind of got to be one of those to want to spend all your time by yourself banging away on a story that exists only in your own mind.
And it's kind of the same thing that all artists or poets are somehow have a very strong vein of depression. I mean, you know, happy people don't write neat, don't do good paintings.
Yeah, I write my best when I feel like crap.
Yeah.
isn't that awful? Oh my God, isn't that awful? And
no,
I agree.
It's not.
It's like, oh,
it's not.
Yeah.
I think it's because
no,
writing
the
is
feeling
therapy.
Like crap part sucks.
Yeah, it does. It really, really does.
Well, that is.
I had an awful.
Well, unless you're Van Gogh, you chop your fucking ear off.
There you go. And I got to get out of here because I got to go. I got to go pick up Agnes from puppy sitting. But Darlene, it's been a fantastic conversation.
Thank you.
Yeah, she's been sitting the grand puppies while the babies have been traveling. Yeah, one of them is a big, beautiful golden retriever, and the boss is a precious little Yorkshire Terrier. And she outsmarts him at every turn. It's so freaking cute.
Oh, hey, Rob, it's so cute.
Did you meet my challenge?
Awesome.
Yes, it got met, Steve. Thank you.
Okay.
Oh, did mine get met? I don't know.
No, it did not. Let's carry, if you don't mind, let's carry that over till tomorrow.
All right, that's
cool. And that'll get stuff started.
And I wanted to compliment you on the wig thing. Never would have known. So you're doing great.
Well, thank you.
So just want to say that.
I appreciate that.
Never would have known. Nope, I never. I'm not seeing it. So good for you. Getting from China. Good for you.
I have a forehead that you know wants to be. You know, it's headed for Mars. But the beautiful thing is the magic is happening, and the male pattern baldness is going away, and it makes me very happy.
Yeah.
Well, thank
Always
you.
Take pleasure in the fact that you don't have Matt Gaetz's enormous, vast, Mount Rushmore-sized forehead.
Oh.
Catty moment.
Catty moment. He is not going to age well. It is not going to be pretty.
Oh.
Nope. He's going to have Emperor Palpatine look to him.
I suspect so.
Oh, he's nasty looking.
His pretty
girlfriend is only with him, but yeah, you know, she's with him because, yeah, it's whatever. We'll see how long that lasts. Okay,
well,
I'll let you go back.
You know, when we found out that he does his own makeup for Fox, it sent me immediately out to find a foundation that better matched my own skin tone. Now, you guys have a great evening, Steve and Darlene.
Have a good night. Take care.
You too. See ya.
Bye-bye.
Thanks,
bye.
Robin. Thanks,
oh, my
Steve.
Pleasure. Thank
Thanks.
You.
You
bye.
Too. Take care.
And so here we are at the end of the program. That was a magnificent conversation. I love the conversations we have here. Thank you so much to our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Thanks to our a la carte contributors. Thanks to everybody who keeps this program on the air. Thanks to everyone who shares your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatsoever manner you may choose. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks so much to Sparky in the chat room. And thanks to Brother Bishop Steve, also in the chat room this evening. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20-plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Please stay safe. It's getting scary again, like it wasn't scary at all before. But please stay safe. Get your vaccine if you haven't already. If you've already gotten it, encourage others to get theirs. It's personal contact that will make the big difference. And of course, most of us don't hang out with a bunch of maggots, but we can at least make the effort if there's someone that needs a talking to. Stay safe doing so. Use your first line defenses. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Use your hand sanitizer. They were giving away free hand sanitizer at Kroger today. I snatched some up, you bet. Wear gloves if need be. Wear your mask where appropriate, which is basically anywhere there's anybody that you don't personally know has been vaccinated. Engage in your social distancing. And if somebody comes toward you saying, you know, we got to protect the little ladies and get them away from the aisle, avoid that person like the plague, because he is. Later.